I want to wear a mask.
Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak.
It's Thursday, April 21st, 2022. This is your award-winning Gitmo Nation Media Assassination, episode 1444.
This is No Agenda.
Spotting smoke, standby, caliber, and broadcasting live from the heart of the Texas Hill Country here in FEMA region number 6. In the morning, everybody. I'm Adam Curry.
And from Northern Silicon Valley, where I'm back from a yak fest. Literally, I'm John C. Dvorak.
Crackpot and Buzzkill in the morning.
Man, you leave me with yak, you come back to me with yak. Yakety yak.
Don't talk back.
How was it? How was your yak?
I was actually stunned.
What does it taste like? Does it taste like antelope? Does it taste, what is it, does it taste like giraffe? I mean, what does it taste like?
It, I'd say it's somewhere between, first of all, let's just, instead of what does it taste, it tastes like yak is what it tastes like.
Okay, yeah, that'll do it.
It is the, it's the most unbelievable hamburger I think I've ever made. Huh. And there was no seasoning whatsoever, except some salt. Huh. It's light. It has, it has a broad spectrum flavor.
How about that?
And, but what is, it's extremely tender. It's extremely light. It has the same kind of fat that Wagyu has, so it's a healthy meat. Except for instead of Wagyu, it's extremely lean. It's like 90%. But for lean meat, it's extremely tender. It's hard to explain, but it stunned everybody.
Good. And did you, did everyone still put ketchup and mayonnaise and mustard and relish on it?
Well, or there was a sauce. It was a hamburger bun.
Okay.
Which has sauce and tomatoes and stuff. But it's beside the point. You could tell the yak was an exceptional product. Now, since everyone was all jacked up about it, JC, of course, started immediately doing research and discovered some of the issues with the yak. It tastes like, takes like three times longer to get the yak to maturity to eat it.
Mm.
So that's expensive. It can't eat, it can't eat at a feedlot, refuses to do so. So it's only going to eat out in the wild. Yeah, it's a grazer, yeah. And it's not like, you know, cows are grazers too, but they don't eat it at a feedlot. You know, anything, if you want to feed them cookies. Oh yeah, good. They had, I think it only has two stomachs maybe. It doesn't have four. But I'm telling you.
No, it's, it, you are telling us. It sounds like it's dynamite.
It is a stunner.
Sounds like it's a good product. All right. Well, we should sell those. No Agenda Yak. Where's your noagendayak.com, people? Come on, let's get this going.
We'll- so my yak, I might as well mention this. My yak supplier currently, and people can write this down because they're gonna, Del Yaks, D-E-L Yaks, which is Desert End Limited, and he's in Montrose, Colorado, and I think you can find him at just Desert End. At DMEA.net.
Yes, and chicks dig this when you present them with yak. All right. Hey, we really stepped in it on the last show.
What did we do?
Well, we had this whole conversation about online harassment of women. Little did I know where this was coming from. I don't know if you've seen the incredible controversy. With Taylor Lorenz of the Washington Post.
Oh, Taylor Lorenz. Yeah, I mean, she is the target of, but this, with but good reason.
Just so you know, this is where it all came from. This is why they're doing these big pieces about harassing women online. And we were appropriately cavalier about this specific harassment online. But what I noticed is... I got a lot of feedback from women saying, well, you know, it really triggered me, this conversation, because it seemed like you were just brushing it aside, and I've been harassed throughout my life, and it kind of crossed over. You know, it's like, well, yes, harassment in real life, in the workplace, etc., completely inappropriate. Those are douchebags. But when you're online, I mean, how do we even know if the target is a woman, to be honest about it? But it's just,
and you don't know where it's coming from, really. It could be a kid, a 12-year-old, and you're all bent out of shape.
It was, somehow this, we, I guess we missed it, but it was brewing, and then this Taylor Lorenz we'll just get through this quickly. We don't have to spend too much time on it. She is, she worked at the New York Times, then left for the Washington Post. What kind of superstar millennial is this? If she's a millennial,
I think she got rousted from the Times.
Right. But why? Because she's so incredibly good?
No. She's the one who they account. She's really a target of Matt Taibbi to an extreme.
Well, Glenn Greenwald, Tucker Carlson,
all the usual suspects. They all hate her because she lies and she makes stuff up and she cries on camera.
Harassed. Here's the crying on camera. This is actually before she went out and did the same thing to the libs of. We don't have to get into that story. Everybody knows it. But I just love hearing this clip, this hypocrisy.
I've had to remove every single social tie. I had severe PTSD from this. I contemplated suicide. It got really bad. You feel like any little piece of information that gets out on you will be used by the worst people on the internet to destroy your life. And it's so isolating and terrifying. It's horrifying. I'm so sorry. It's overwhelming. It's really hard.
That was so good.
There you go. You're mocking the poor crying woman.
Oh, I am. And I'm mocking her because when I saw this, I'm like, oh, this girl's not well. She needs some help because, you know, if you're in the business of journalism and you are pitching your stories online and you're, you know, in many cases, doxing, outing people, doing really kind of horrible things.
Some terrible things.
And, you know, then you're going to get this back at you. It's just going to happen. And I think a lot of journalists are irked by it, but this conversation between, Megyn Kelly and Glenn Greenwald, just a short minute here, there's a little more going on with Taylor Lorenz.
And I'm like, you're right. I feel zero empathy for her. Zero. Because she's created this life for herself. She's the worst about doing this to others. And then when called out on the consequences of her choice of profession, she's made this her work. When called out on the consequences that she unleashes on others, she wants us to feel sorry for her. Well, I don't. And it's a pattern. She released a tweet. I know you've retweeted this, and I think we've got it talking about her many like psychological issues. Do we have it, Debbie? Here's what she tweeted. June of 2021. This is definitely TMI, and I will probably delete, but I'm honestly so proud and I want to share it. Something people might not know is I have very bad trichotillomania and dermatillomania. And this is the first time in my life that I haven't had an open wound on my head. And the bottom line is these things are hair. It's a hair pulling disorder and a skin picking disorder, which they describe from the Mayo Clinic as a mental illness. These are mental illnesses related to obsessive compulsive disorder.
So if you have, and it's I'm sure it's serious. If you're pulling your hair out and picking your skin, you need help and you probably shouldn't be in the public eye where people can say nasty things to you.
Well, the question is, does she actually have that? I actually knew someone that had the disorder and they complained about it because it's annoying to them.
Yeah, because you pull your hair out? Yeah, I can see why that would be annoying.
Yeah, well, it's mostly the skin picking. They always you get a little itchy spot and then they pick and pick and pick at it until you get to get a sore because you pick too much. There's a lot of other things going on with her, whether she has that or not. She's done a great job of promoting herself to a position of a high paid working journalist, and she, and the grief that she creates, I don't know how she keeps her jobs, to be honest about it, but she's very talented at it. And, I don't know what to make of her.
No, it's not that important. But what I really despise, because I saw some of these emails she was sending to people, you know, asking for comment. And this has happened. In fact, this happened to me just the other week where a reporter will email you and say, on deadline, I have a deadline. I need to know within the next hour. I'm exaggerating. But there's some lawsuit taking place in the Netherlands and a journalist asked me, hey, are you a part of this? Did you get screwed by these guys? And I said, I have no comment. I'm not interested in this topic. And then they came back with, okay, well, you know, so will you confirm or deny that you were screwed out of them for 100,000 euros. I don't even know what they're talking about. But you know, and you can't even reply to that. You just have to leave it alone. But this whole I need to know, I'm on deadline within an hour, otherwise we're going to go with what we have. This is the chicken shit I really hate from big press, Washington Post, and the New York Times does that too.
That's what you do.
Is that a typical journalist thing?
Here's the thing. I'll go on the other side of the argument.
Please do.
I'm doing this piece. The editor wants it in by 2.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm calling around as noon. So basically, I'm on deadline, meaning I have a deadline that if I don't meet it, it says I got to produce whatever I got. Or they don't even run it, which is generally what happens. And so you call them and saying you're on deadline is a courtesy to people in the know who are usually media savvy, and they know that, okay, I can get you something in time or I can't. And they usually say, if you're media savvy, you say, I can't help you. I won't be able to get you anything. Or you go, what is your deadline exactly?
Mm.
And then they come back with 2 o'clock, and then you say, I can't do anything. I can't help you. Sorry. And then
right.
You just leave it.
Right. But then they come back with, oh, okay, so we're going, this is literally what she did.
No, they shouldn't do that.
That's what she said.
If you ask them did you ask them the deadline?
No, I'm telling you what happened with Taylor Lorenz. I'm talking about me.
Oh, no, Taylor Lorenz, she's out of control.
That's the one I'm talking about. She says, on
she
deadline.
She sent you a note? She's
no,
the
no.
Oh, you're confusing me.
Yeah. In Holland, it was just completely irrelevant. It's nothing to do. Just, I was saying that I know journalists do this, and what they do is, well, if you don't have, so, you know, if you said, okay, I'm sorry, I can't help you, you don't have time, her response would be, great, we're going to go with what you have, that you have a special relationship with that account. You know, then they just assume that since
that's
what I wanted to hear.
Oh, she's no good.
I was questioning myself.
Does that sort of thing, that's not right. And so, I mean, I'm surprised. Even talking about her will draw her ire. I mean, we'll probably get some.
Oh, no.
Some hit piece I'll try to do.
Oh, my. And she's an ageist. If you listen to, she was on, oh, my good. I couldn't even clip it. It was so bad. She was on with Jason Calacanis, who now has Molly Wood working for him. Did you know that?
Yeah, I did.
This Week in Startups. That was interesting. So, and they're like, oh, they love her. Oh, she just threw another T-bomb. They're like all digging her. And she gets on there and she's talking about, you know, these guys, they're boomers on TikTok. And she's really ageist. It's just, I don't know. I think this all is, somehow it all comes together as a part of Twitter and Elon Musk wanting to buy Twitter. Now, apparently, he's putting together a tender offer. Somehow, I think it's related to that. Because
it's out of control.
It seems like in the United States, liberals and perhaps, let's just say, the Democrat Party are really afraid that Twitter would not be under their thumb. Auspices, their
thumb.
Their thumb. It's like, and it's kind of obvious.
I find it fascinating as much as you do. There's a humor element to it too, to just to watch them twist in the wind. And Elon's always got that smirk on his face, so like he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
And
there was something, some interesting connection. So, oh, yes. What is this? After Twitter rejects Musk offer, DeSantis and Musk team up with a new strategy. So implying that the governor of Florida is going to...
Bull crap.
Yeah. And you know how they make this connection? Because the state of Florida, you know, they have investments for the pension fund, and the pension fund owns some shares in Twitter. So now it's like when Elon does something, oh yeah, it's now DeSantis is doing it too. They're together.
Well,
a stretch.
It's fascinating that Calacanis and Molly Wood haven't got a clue.
No, they, oh man, now I'm thinking I should have clipped it, because all you hear is, well, you know, GOP, 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 GOP. I'm like, why don't you say either, why don't you call out who's really, GOP is nothing. Republican National, you know, the Republican Party, you know, the national, the actual organization. No, it's just more political bullcrap. And the show is called This Week in Startups.
Yeah, but it sounds like other shows that are supposedly tech shows and just want to talk about politics.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we'll talk about some tech. Here's my favorite. Netflix.
I know.
Who could have predicted that, eh?
Well, you know, there were signals, there were signs.
Oh, John, we've been saying this for years. We've been calling this Netflix a Ponzi for years. It's a Ponzi scheme.
I know, but it was. You can almost say the same thing about Tesla. The stock has skyrocketed.
Yes, of course.
It maintained a very high number. It was very hard to short, and people were. We talk about this on the DH Unplugged show all the time about shorting Netflix was like, you know, taking real gamble because they just had everything going on to keep shorts from working out. But everyone kept wanting to do it. And so now that it actually collapsed practically, I mean, I think there's a long way. Once it starts to go down, once these stocks start to plummet,
yeah.
The bottom is zero, people. It's not 200.
Let me play this.
Overnight, Netflix stock plunging as much as 25% after the streaming powerhouse announced it lost subscribers for the first time in more than a decade.
Just when you think it couldn't get any worse, it just does.
Netflix blaming more competition, illegal password sharing, and Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
Damn you, Putin. Illegal password sharing.
Putin.
That's
no,
nonsense. Putin. They encourage password sharing amongst families.
Of course they do. Five members, I think. But it's Putin.
Well, I don't think they had a number, but all these services, Hulu, Netflix, Amazon, they all encourage password sharing.
Get beyond the password sharing. It's Putin. Don't you understand?
Password sharing and yeah. Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The company ended the first quarter.
I'd love to know how Russia's invasion of Ukraine, is that because the Ukrainians are stopped watching, you know, like, oh, we're getting invaded, cancel Netflix.
It seems to me that if anyone's going to be illegal sharing passwords, it's going to be Ukrainians. The Netflix stock should have shot up.
Password sharing and Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The company ended the first quarter with 200,000 fewer subscribers than the end of last year.
We're seeing a lot of the subscription fervor that was going on during the pandemic. We're seeing that starting to slow down.
After increasing its monthly cost in January, the basic Netflix plan is now about $10. But according to a new study, more than 60% of people think they shouldn't have to pay any more than $7.50 per month for a streaming service.
So what I love about the story is that...
Who did this story?
That was ABC. So the whole
terrible.
So the whole industry is collapsing. Network television, the ratings are abominable. Everything, the interruptive, anything that is interrupted by advertising has sucked. That's why everyone was loving, you know, Netflix, of course, they have some hits. And then Hulu, and I think a lot
what?
Of... Well, no, I'm going back. Well, right now they have Bridgerton, but they before that, you know, House of Cards. They've had hits. They've had single hits. Which brought people in, and then once the hit is over, once they binge it, which I think is probably, well, this is the last quarter, but Bridgerton just started. But these are incredibly expensive. They have to pay off all the everyone up front instead of, you know, being a back-end deal for a lot of actors and producers, etc. And you could just see with all the competition that someone had to go down. And the amount of debt that Netflix has is just insane. But now their strategy moving forward is the real head shaker. They're going to do a free tier with advertising.
Yeah, it's called OTA. It's called get an antenna and stick it on the back of your TV set.
I mean, that goes against the entire model.
Yeah.
So I love it. I want to see all this stuff collapse. Yes, yeah, and maybe we should say something about Netflix's programming in general. I mean, there's a few things that we watch. Bridgerton would be the one, I guess. And if you just scroll down the homepage, it's all woke stuff.
Yes, it turned woke. Well, the guy who runs Netflix, Hoffman,
he doesn't run it anymore, does he?
No, but he's still got influence.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
I think he's still on the board.
Yeah, what is he?
He's chairman, isn't he?
No, I mean, you were going to say, so the guy.
Oh, yeah, he's the biggest supporter of woke stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He is the guy who put in Gascon down in Los Angeles. Which oh, is
that's right.
Enough.
That's right.
Him and Soros put this guy in, and the place has become a crime-ridden hellhole. And that's reason enough for people in L.A. to turn on him.
But there's more stuff with these streamers. And I'll just include Spotify as a streamer as well. Again, another company that really hasn't ever published a profit, as far as I know, or anything meaningful. They had all these exclusive deals, Joe Rogan deal being the most visible. But, you know, one of their other really big deals, in fact, before Joe Rogan came in and we talked about it, was the Obamas. And, you know, they're out there in Variety saying, yes, we're going,
done anything.
We're going to end our exclusive deal with Spotify. Now, I think something else happened here. I think Spotify went, no, we can't. You remember that they couldn't fill the advertising? They didn't have enough people, and so they had to take it from an exclusive on Spotify and open it up so every podcast app could then listen to it for their Tide or whatever was their launch sponsor. It's pathetic. Yeah. No one cares. That's the point. No one cares. Obamas. Yes, yeah, we're looking, what they're looking for, Higher Ground is their production company.
I know. The Hill should be the name.
They're looking for a new deal with a non-exclusive deal. So they want a lot of money, and so they can still publish it everywhere, I guess. And it's the Michelle Obama podcast. You know, he also had the Born in the USA, which was a podcast with President Obama and Bruce Springsteen. Basically a very sad Mo Facts with Adam Curry ripoff. Yeah. So... You know, I'm just celebrating the death of mainstream. That's what I'm doing here. I love it. I love it.
It ain't dead yet.
Oh, it's dead.
I watch stuff. I watch it's certain dead. Shows. Yeah, I watch man, things. Dead. I
that
my
dead.
My thinking on advice for people is to get an OTA antenna.
Yeah, this is this is a so every television today in the United States at least can receive over the air digital signals. Very interesting stations are available. And some of it wouldn't matter you if you were... yeah.
You can get 4K over the air.
Yeah, but 4K of poop is still poop.
4K of the nightly news, for example, would be very watchable.
Wow. All right. Cool.
Well, you have to watch the news. They got news shows. you got to see what's going on.
Yeah.
And it's not a big bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think Hulu is my favorite of all these streamers.
Yeah.
It's got HBO Plus. It's got everything on it. It's like it was you pay the premium for it. In other words, you get no commercials for any show.
Yeah.
There's zero commercials for like TV, regular network TV. It's fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
And OTA, boomy, good.
Yeah. An update, another thing we kind of stumbled onto, and I had no idea this was taking place, and this is the auto sear switches. You know, we played a clip of some of these
we got called out on this.
Well, called out, I mean...
Well, I got called out.
No, we all...
Because I was going on and on about
believe
this and
me.
That.
Now, believe me, we both got called out as not knowing what's going on, and I think that's okay, because this is relatively new, the past... It's relatively...
Well, we can't know everything,
no.
And we definitely can't know about this. This is pretty wild.
So the report was... the mass shooting used a Glock automatic pistol, which means it could shoot off, you know, this full mag of 33 rounds within a couple of seconds. And I'd never heard of it. You hadn't heard of it. We thought it was typical mainstream misreporting. But no, the auto sear is indeed like a $20 device that with just tapping it right onto the back of your Glock turns it into a machine gun. I've looked into this. There's wire hanger sear, auto sears, which you can basically jam a coat hanger into your AR-15 and have it go full auto. I'm not going to explain the mechanics, but it's very, very simple. But here's the thing that blew me away. An auto sear, the most common automatic conversion device, transforms a semi-automatic gun into a weapon capable of emptying an entire magazine with a single pull of the trigger, also known as switches or chips. Auto sears have been around since the 70s.
Baby, it's
We got bell bottoms and auto sears coming back. This is groovy.
Oh, you know, this, yeah, that would be a great comparison if anyone ever knew of those things back in the day.
Well, I'm just reading the mainstream news. Someone knew about it. I didn't. But this is,
you know, they used to have, you know, I sent to one of the guys who sent me a bunch of, you know, all the details of some videos and how they work and all the rest. And I'm thinking this is like a big new deal. The Mac 10 was always designed to be turned into a machine gun. A little Mac 10 or Mac 11 nowadays would get Mac 10.
Yeah, but John, you're missing the point. This is a $20 upgrade that any gangbanger or anybody can use. And here's the problem. These are being shipped into our country en masse from China.
Of course.
This is the real problem. The Chinese are giving us everything we need to kill ourselves. Fentanyl, auto sears.
They'd love it.
Yeah.
But I don't know if this design was a Chinese design or it's just some
entrepreneur in China. It's not a Chinese design, but it's coming in from China.
Yeah, but if it wasn't, okay, let's before we get into the anti-Chinese, I don't know what to call it, bigotry. If it wasn't coming in from China, you don't think somebody would be making it here or Germany or Mexico?
I don't think
it's so specific to that China. I just think that Chinese, somebody found a source in China can make it damn cheap.
Well, then we need to find whoever that source is and stop them, because that's the problem. If I say, okay, here's my design, China, send it to me, that's going to be traceable to me. If China is just sending these things in through any other means, you know, they send seeds to everybody. Why not throw in an auto sear? I don't know. But the fact is,
throwing in when you throw the, no, with the, yeah, with the fentanyl.
Yeah.
There's one in the box.
What I'm saying, free with every key of fentanyl. The point is that what's not being discussed is how these are getting in, where they're coming from, who designed them, who ordered them, who shipped them.
I think that boat sailed.
We can't get fertilizer from China, but we got auto sears.
Once you get those things, come on. Once the Chinese get a hold of a design like that, everybody's cloning it. You never figure out
I'm just going to go with it. Screw the Chinese. They're sending this to us to kill us, for us to kill ourselves. And it's perfect. It's perfect. This is the right moment to roll this out. Everything's stressful. We've got all kinds of crime. And now all of a sudden people are spewing 30 rounds in 2 seconds.
That's unbelievable. If the videos are online to watch this thing shoot, it can't be good for the gun.
No,
let's start with that premise.
It's not good for the gun, but also you're not really going to hit anything targeted. You're going to spray stuff all around the room or wherever you happen to be shooting. Yeah, this is very bad.
Party gun.
Very bad. Very bad. Party gun. Now, this is the gangbanger gun. So maybe we do the latest COVID update that concerns mainly the United States. It may have implications for the rest of the world, and that would be our mandates on federally regulated transportation.
I have the mask ruling.
Yes, I have. Well, let me play a. I have a couple here. I see what you have. Let me just play a quick intro.
Well, many health officials are worried that we're lifting the mask mandates too soon, especially with the emergence of a more contagious subvariant.
Oh, that's not the one I wanted.
What bull crap.
Wait a minute. I wanted. Yeah, let's start with this one.
We are just getting clarity from the administration on that judge's ruling today, saying they are reviewing the judge's order, but that for now, the TSA will not enforce the mask mandate on public transportation. And adding to all of that confusion, as you mentioned, there is a new mask mandate here in Philadelphia that took effect today. That means about 20,000 fans here to see the 76ers play tonight will have to mask up once again.
You can now fly or ride the buses and trains mask-free. The move comes just hours after a federal judge in Florida ruled it was unlawful. Today, a U.S. district judge said the court accepts the CDC's argument that masks will limit COVID-19 transmission, but that alone was not sufficient to exceed the agency's authority. Infectious disease specialist Dr. Celine Gounder says it's still too soon.
We don't know how the BA.2 variant is going to play out across the country. As of right now, my advice as a physician to anybody traveling on a plane would be to continue wearing a mask when you're traveling on public transportation, including on an airplane.
Let's set the context for people who don't live in America or have just kind of missed this somehow. The CDC asserted it had the regulatory authority and power to impose these mandates. And that was ultimately challenged by a federal judge in, well, not challenged, but overturned by a federal judge in Florida, of course, a Trump appointee, which makes it just that much more fun. And also, you got to wonder why now and why not a year ago, Judge? This is because Trump.
Because it came before her. The judges can't just ad lib and do whatever they want whenever they want.
How does that work?
You have to have something has to come before you that you have to make a determination.
Do we know who brought this before the judge?
It's kind of vague, mm-hmm. but somebody did, and mm-hmm. it was in Florida, and that's when the whole thing came down. I have the NPR stuff, which kind of outlines it a little bit. This is mask ruling one.
The federal government is now appealing a court decision that struck down the federal mask mandate on public transportation. The Justice Department filed the appeal at the request of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Face coverings became optional this week on many planes, trains, and buses after a federal judge declared that the CDC had exceeded its authority in requiring masks for travelers. The CDC has faced many such challenges to its authority during the pandemic, to what it can and can't do in the name of public health. Now it's fighting back.
So we kind of jumped over one little piece here. Is the mandate was overturned, which is it's immediate law, and you probably saw people on the airplanes getting the announcements with various responses, but I would say mainly positive. On the 18th, when this took place, the CDC had already said we're going to do two more weeks until May 3rd. To just, you know, make sure that everything's okay with the BA2 variant. Then there was this period of like 36 hours, like, oh, are they going to appeal? Or what are they going to do? And then it was, no, we're not going to appeal. Then we are going to appeal. So now they are appealing. And I look forward to what else you have from NPR.
Well, here's part two of the same clip.
NPR health reporter Ping Huang is here. Hi, Ping.
Ping.
Hey, Ari.
So this.
Wait a minute. What did you say? Hey, I? Or was that his name? What did she say there?
NPR health reporter Ping Huang is here. Hi, Ping.
Hey, Ari.
Hey, Ari.
This mask ruling.
Hey, Ari. Got it.
That is now being challenged by the Justice Department. Will it stand?
Well, that's still up in the air. As you mentioned, the Justice Department and CDC are now appealing to get a travel mask mandate reinstated. And the CDC says the order for wearing masks on planes, trains, and buses is still needed for public health. And also that appealing the decision protects the public health authority.
Who said this? Wait a minute. She's ad-libbing.
No, no, they
She's
all
not
say
reporting.
This. They all say this. They all say this.
Oh, it's safe and effective. Okay, I'm sorry. It's just one of those little terms they throw in. Go on.
The order for wearing masks on planes, trains, and buses is still needed for public health. And also that appealing the decision protects the public health authority. The nationwide mask mandate on trains, buses, and planes was struck down Monday by a Trump-appointed judge who thought that the CDC did not have the authority to make people wear masks, even if it might be good for public health. The Justice Department and CDC disagree, so this evening, the DOJ filed a notice of appeal in federal court in Tampa to get the ball rolling.
Question. So this is specifically the Department of Justice's job to go against the federal judge? Is that the typical procedure?
Well, they can go against any judge they want.
Right, but is it typically the Department of Justice who does that? And what does that mean? It goes to the next.
Well, anybody can do it.
Okay.
The Department of Justice is the one that was affected because they're representing the United States government.
Okay.
The Department of Justice is the lawyers for the government.
Okay, I got you.
And so this was against the CDC, so boom, they would take it.
Got it.
So if it was a question of authority, whether the CDC is allowed to do this, is it clear what kinds of powers the CDC has?
Well, traditionally, the CDC makes the most use of its soft powers, you know, using science and reason to persuade states and individuals to do things for the sake of public health. But it also has hard powers, which go back to the 1944 Public Health Service Act. In the past, the agency has used these to quarantine individuals, and in this pandemic, CDC has been using them to issue broad orders on a range of things, like making travelers test a mask, to banning evictions, and turning migrants away at the borders. Dr. Marty Setrin, the CDC's head of global migration and quarantine, told me last year that this is new territory for the CDC.
This has been the largest and most expansive or inclusive use of regulatory authority, given the unprecedented nature of this pandemic threat.
No one from CDC would talk on the record now, as these orders get challenged in court, and the mask ruling was just the latest defeat.
I thought we had dealt with the CDC, didn't we? Didn't we all, like, weren't we all laughing at the CDC because they reversed all of their positions, like, overnight? Clearly political move. And it was, CDC, we need to get rid of them. We need to have a new organization. We need to reboot them, have something new. I wonder if that's part of what this is.
You never know. I mean, it's so politicized at this point. That's as if the CDC, you know, they turn left or they say, you know, these Republicans have a point. No, they don't. You should go. It's hard to say what the basis of these crazinesses are about. But it is totally political. Was that clip part three?
Yeah, it was two. That was two.
Oh, okay. Right. Three's got the kicker in it.
Like, what were some of the others?
Well, the biggest blow came last August when the Supreme Court ruled that the CDC exceeded its authority with its ban on evictions. Lindsay Wiley, a health law professor at UCLA, said that the move was a bit of a stretch for CDC.
A lot of the general public and a lot of federal judges feel like, you know, this isn't exactly what CDC's role should be. This is something state and local governments are doing, and it should really be left to them.
Ultimately, the Supreme Court said CDC didn't have the authority to do it, and they struck it down. Now, that was one ruling on evictions, but law experts say it had a ripple effect. Lower courts could use it to limit the CDC's powers, too, and the judge in Florida did cite it this week as she canceled the travel mask mandate.
What would that ripple effect do if the CDC's powers get restricted more broadly? What kind of impacts could that have on public health?
Well,
we're all going to die.
They worry that limiting public health powers is short-sighted. Here's Wendy Parmet, a health law professor at Northeastern University.
You can't assume that everything in the future is going to look either epidemiologically or politically like what we have seen.
She says that the next pandemic could be very deadly to kids, or one where Republicans might want more restrictive measures than Democrats, as they did during the Ebola outbreak. She says that the CDC needs to have flexible powers to deal with health threats effectively. Now, ultimately, Congress may need to step in and spell out the agency's powers, but with the current political climate, it's not a clear path.
Yeah.
So the CDC said no evictions. What is there? What kind of? They're not the military police, you know, in a war zone. They can't make these sorts of edicts. And now they're all bent out of shape because they got overturned by the Supreme Court. The whole thing is bogus.
I think Jen Psaki kind of let the cat out of the bag. What this really is about? It's not about your health for the next 2 weeks or your safety traveling. It's about the future.
And the Department of Justice, as you noted, has indicated that they would appeal, not just because they think it's entirely reasonable, of course, to have this additional time to look at it, but because they think that the current for current and future public health crises, we want to preserve that authority for the CDC to have in the future.
It's about power. They just want to have it for the next thing they want to put, you know, and it'll be a bag on your head. Maybe something else. Yeah, they just want this power.
With two holes in it.
It's power from the faceless, nameless CDC.
Yeah, that's exactly right. They want to put a bag on your head and march you around. You nailed it.
Yeah. The flight.
By the way, I have a longer clip about the appeal.
Oh, let's do that.
Which you could play it. You can cut it off because this is definitely was not clipped properly by me. I can tell by the little.
Yeah, I can tell by the length. Yeah. Let's listen.
The thing is, it's all up to the Ukrainian armed forces now.
Yeah. This is under Fed's appealing mask?
Yeah.
Yeah. This obviously the front end of this clip
did not belong.
About the Ukrainians is not part of this clip.
Hold on, let me see.
Coming in to Ukraine, say it's hard to know exactly how prepared they really are.
Ukrainians have been.
Okay, I'm not going to edit your clip on the fly. That's a little hard. I do have the representative of the flight attendants union, and her thoughts. And you have to understand, she's being interviewed, and she has a big Starbucks union badge on. I don't know why she's, maybe she's just promoting another union for the heck of it. But she gets a little irritated, and I find her quite irritating, in fact, as well.
Passengers were cheering, and Phil said a lot of crews were cheering.
I think it's a CNBC, actually.
Where was it like everything else in this country? There were half of the crew was cheering, and the other half was booing. Were most flight attendants happy or sad that the mask mandate was lifted for airplanes?
Well, look, Joe, we've been enforcing this mask mandate, not just since it was a federal mandate, but for over 2 years now. And we put that in place. Let's not forget that the airlines put that in place without any support from the federal government, because we needed people to understand that they could be safe flying on the plane.
What do you mean? This sounds a little revisionist. He says we put the mandate in place, the airline industry put the mandates in place without support from the federal government. It was the federal government who came up with the distances, and they had this, I remember all the animations.
They based it on how many people, the way you had to be for the air filtration. Yeah,
they had all these models of how the airflow worked, and it was totally forced. Without support from the government, sure.
So now, she's pro-masks? She'd be like, I've heard her all happy as clam because they don't have to call people out.
To people to understand that they could be safe flying on the plane. Now, we've had certain mitigation factors since then. Of course, the vaccine, more access to proper PPE, more access to testing. But, you know, on a plane, you have to have the spirit that we're all in this together. Everybody has to practically undress in order to show that they're not a security threat, or give, you know, extensive data to the government so they can assess that before you go.
Well, she laughed.
I know. I'm glad you caught it, because I want to stop and say, she's talking about everyone has to show you're not, we're all in this together. This, by the way, this is real fascist talk from this lady. We're all in this together. You have to give extensive information to the government about yourself.
Yeah, she got that laugh in there.
Why are you laughing, lady?
My name is Bob Snow.
Oops, sorry.
You have to have the spirit that we're all in this together. Everybody has to practically undress in order to show that they're not a security threat, or give, you know, extensive data to the government so they can assess that before you go through those security checkpoints. And you have to wear your seatbelt. It's not just about you. It's about protecting everyone around you, because you can be thrown around and fall down on them. The same idea. The only reason that this has been an issue is because it was so politicized. So I want to be really clear. You asked me the question, where do we stand? We did not take a position on extending the mask mandate. And the reason for that is because you're right. It's split. I have members, and I have actually a lot of passengers I'm hearing from this morning, who are begging us even go on strike to stop this. People are really upset about it. And I have other people who have been waiting and really excited for this to go away. I have to say, going into the summer months for flight attendants, it's hard for maybe somebody flying a couple hours on a flight to wear a mask. Imagine people who have been on the front lines wearing the mask for 14, 15, 16 hours and having to enforce it with other people who are grumbling all the time. So there's absolutely a sigh of relief from flight crews, but there's also people who are really concerned.
This is a slanted report. And the way it started off, where did you get this?
CNBC. Yeah.
So,
I think there's something
it started
else.
Started off with the booing. I've seen clip after clip of people in these airplanes. No, they're all cheering.
Not all cheering.
Booing.
Not all cheering.
Boo! Boo! I want to wear a mask. Doesn't make sense.
Yeah, well,
you want to wear a mask? Wear a mask. You know, the boo.
We have to bear a couple things in mind. One, the mask is political. You got a mask, you're cool, you're dim. You're not wearing a mask, you're likely a Republican, possibly QAnon. That's the way it's perceived.
Yeah, it could be.
Now, also, in Congress, they were working on a bill for the rowdy passengers. You know, this was the Buttigieg thing. Instead of focusing on getting, you know, actual pilots and flight attendants to work and training new ones, because we're going to be quite short in the tens of thousands of pilots, certainly. No. We've got to make rules to punish these rowdy passengers. And that's off the table now because they can't do it. There's no more rowdy passengers. It's going to end because the mask mandates will end. You watch. All of a sudden, people are going to calm down. Not entirely, because we're still missing way too many TSA agents. So the lines are still insane.
Yeah, the lines
are long.
The people are being stressed. They're stressed at the airport.
Very stressed.
And then they put them on an airplane in a small enclosed tube.
Now,
here's
some great news. Email from the Nolacek family. Now, you recall the Nolacek family, the whole family are producers and
are
knights and dames.
One of the main providers of meat to the No Agenda audience.
That's right. They lost their USDA seal of approval because they would not force their employees to all wear masks, which is not a mandate. But the inspectors from the FDA would come along and say, well, and they do these, pop inspections. Whoop, here we are. And if anyone doesn't have a mask, we're walking away. We're not doing your inspection. So screw you. And God bless the Nolacek family. They sued the government. And here's an update. Greetings in the morning from everyone at Nolacek Meats in Thorpe, Wisconsin. An update regarding our case against the USDA challenging the legality of FSIS Notice 34-21. This is the masking thing. Well, it's nothing short of a miracle. On March 15th, the science changed, according to the CDC, and the USDA rescinded the notice. In all reality, the Department of Justice knew they didn't have a case to withhold the federal mark of inspection vis-a-vis notice and didn't want to lose in court. And just like that, the science changed overnight. Yes, we technically won our case against the USDA, however, only because the notice was rescinded and therefore the case was dismissed without prejudice. The lack of accountability on the part of the federal government regarding what was illegally imposed by the USDA is the frustrating part. I would love for them to go and just keep suing for lost revenue, anything. Although I think they probably did better because of the no agenda Gitmo Nation.
In the direction of lost revenue when your sales increase because of it.
Yeah. Anyway, they do want to. So we've moved from one manufactured crisis to another. It just keeps getting stranger and stranger. But here we are doing the work. It's encouraging, though, to see people coming together, stepping in ways that empower others to find their voice. What a time to be alive. Thank you to the great producers of No Agenda for sharing your time, talents, and treasure to the best podcast in the universe and for bringing 100% listeners. And of course, if listeners should feel inclined, I love these guys. Nolacek to set up a discount code for all orders placed online. Use ITM33 for a 20% checkout discount on all orders. We're very happy for the Nolacek family. It's horrible when the small producers of America get so pestered. And what a farce, man, for them just to drop it. A-holes.
That's what they do. That's what you do.
So while all this conversation is going on,
I have one last mask clip, if you
want. Oh, yeah, sure. Let's do it. I got one more.
This is a local story from masks on Uber and Lyft. And it's not a great clip. It's just like, it's one of those head-shaking clips. Like, why do people care this much about any of this?
Uber and Lyft have now dropped their masking requirements for rideshare drivers and riders. As Aditi Bundlamudi reports from member station KQED, drivers are now weighing how that decision will affect their safety.
The rideshare companies are also allowing customers to sit in the front passenger seat, which was previously blocked off. Muhammad Shafiq Qureshi, who has been an Uber driver in the Bay Area since it launched in 2009, says before vaccines were available, he wanted riders to wear masks. Now that he's vaccinated and boosted, Qureshi is getting more comfortable driving without a mask.
It depends on the passenger, because, for example, if you look safe, then a little bit scary. Otherwise, I have no issue.
Advocates for rideshare drivers, however, say the move will put drivers at risk. Some drivers also may not feel comfortable asking customers to wear masks for fear of a bad review.
Did we forget the last 2.5 years of mass debate? And we know that they really just aren't that effective. Did we just collectively forget this?
I don't know how it works. I've always thought the same kind of thing. We've been doing this show for 15 years and I don't know how it works. I've concluded that it's like the, very fine people. It's like these things have locked in like a bad tick and just hang on for dear life. And there's nothing you can do about it. You're just stuck. And yeah.
And it'll be in the history books.
But it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's propaganda because it's a constant message that gets...
Never ends.
And this is actually kind of a distraction because what the conversation...
It's like the gassing in Syria.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the line. They drew a line and then they got gas. They didn't do anything. I mean, you just can't do anything about it. And it's the most frustrating part about doing these reports.
Well, Captain Bob Snow is doing something about it. There was a report about a week ago, maybe almost 2 weeks ago, that an Airbus had landed in, I want to say, Dallas, American Airlines, and 6 minutes after landing, which I don't know if that was during taxi or at the gate, the pilot passed out, went into full cardiac arrest, was brought back to life with three shocks to the heart. And this immediately, of course, was blamed on the mandated vaccinations. There was no real, I didn't see any reporting of this in mainstream, any whatsoever, because why would they, considering who sponsors them? But Captain Bob Snow has recorded his own little video. Audio's not great, but you'll be able to hear it. He's in the ICU. He's all wired up. He's got everything coming out of him.
My name is Bob Snow. I'm a captain. I've been a captain for a number of years. My total service with the company is over 31 years. On November 7th, I was mandated to receive a vaccine. Quite literally, I was told if I did not receive the vaccination, I would be fired. This was from our director of flight. So, under duress, I received the vaccine. Now, just a few days ago, after landing in Dallas, 6 minutes after we landed, I passed out. I coded. I required three shocks. I need to be intubated. I'm now in the ICU in Dallas. This is what the vaccine has done for me. I will probably never fly again, based upon the criteria that the FAA establishes for pilots. I was hoping to teach my daughter to fly. She wants to be a pilot. That will probably never happen. All courtesy of the vaccine. This is unacceptable, and I'm one of the victims. You can see that this is the actual result of the vaccine for some of us. Mandatory, no questions asked, get the shot or you're fired. This is not the American way.
Now, typically, we'd say with this kind of truth bomb, you might want to be careful of flying small aircraft and stay away from hot tubs. In this case, I'd like to recommend maybe get out of the ICU. fact that this guy is
too many good TV shows where somebody comes in and just puts the pillow over your head and walks out casually.
And now we're seeing hepatitis popping up everywhere, massive increase in Europe, Australia, New Zealand. Chronic COVID is very AIDS-like, as in acquired immune deficiency disease. Not necessarily HIV that gives you AIDS, but AIDS. And people are, their immune systems appear to be shot and blown out. With Australia, New Zealand keep report, the politicians, the health professionals actually say, so we've got 40% rise in cardiac arrest. We don't know what it is. It's crazy.
It's unbelievable. It's crazy talk.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter because we're just going to improve the product, people.
Promising news from Moderna. Sanity's new and improved COVID shot works better than the original vaccine.
Oh, it's new and improved.
And could change how we get boosters in the future. Whit Johnson is at Mount Sinai Morningside Hospital here in Manhattan for us. Good morning, Whit.
Michael, good morning to you. While this new booster shot is not yet available to the public, it's an important step as Moderna works to create a stronger booster in the future that can stand up to multiple variants. Moderna announcing this new and improved booster works better than the original. It's a so-called bivalent booster, meaning it targets two different variants. In this case, the shot was specifically designed against the original and beta variants, but lab studies showed promising results across multiple variants of concern, including Omicron, with a twofold increase in antibodies compared to the original shot, and those antibodies stayed high for 6 months. Now, Moderna is also working on an Omicron-specific booster. Study results are expected sometime this summer, but experts are hopeful that a booster of this kind could be ready to roll out to the general public by fall. Robin?
Encouraging. All right, Whit. Thank you.
Encouraging. A bivalent booster. Yeah, they're not stopping. This is not going to stop. They want the power to do it again. Maybe it'll be bird flu. I don't know. Something. They just want this power.
They're jacked up about this technology to the extent that they're covering up everything. And they're using the humans, you know, the human population as a test bed.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not stopping because they must see something in this that is really promising. Yeah. I mean, you laugh.
Yeah.
But they're just not doing it because they're ogres. I mean, there must be something positive. I mean, they can't be that just pure evil. I mean, there's got to be something. There has to be some plus side to it.
I'm pretty sure that most of the people who do this reporting and their producers and everyone who's on the beat, that they believe it. They just believe it all. They're into it. They're digging it. And then
but I'm talking about behind the scenes. They got the real people that know what the hell's going on, know that this is a fiasco.
I'm questioning how many people really know this or really believe it or just say, oh, that's Russian disinformation. I'm telling you.
Well, I think most people are in denial. I'm not going to argue that.
Yeah.
But when these documents come out showing this horrendous, you know, results and things that should have been, that lesser products have been taken off the market permanently for achieving.
Yeah.
It's just something's wrong unless there's some true sense of this is some sort of thing that will save us from reptilian genes or something. I have no idea.
Well, the idea is certainly to get it into everybody's body. That's for sure. mRNA forever. That is the push. And that's been a push from the pharmaceutical industry for a long time. We've played enough clips from them over the years saying, "Boy, it'd be great if we could get gene therapy in everybody's body. Wouldn't that be great? We could fix them. We could make them better, improve them."
Yeah, you make people a platform.
There's
a human bus.
Yeah. The Smart Ass podcast, which I'd never...
There are people out there that will understand
what
that...
Oh, I know what the bus is. The Smart Ass podcast, I'd never heard before, but I think I'm going to start listening to it, is a trio of very, very famous people who do this podcast. Jason Bateman, Will Arnett, and Sean Hayes. Jason Bateman, of course, Ozarks and Teen Wolf 3. Will Arnett, many, many things. Saturday Night Live, of course. And Sean Hayes, Will and Grace. And it's kind of a fun podcast, but it was really interesting to hear how they missed entirely what is going on with testing. And this is Sean Hayes. He's explaining how he needed to get a test because he's on Broadway, or he's in the theater, and he has to have a test every single day to go into the theater and perform at the stage. And he got the runaround, and it just doesn't click for them what's really going on here. Have a listen.
You know what's so crazy? So when I go to the theater, I have to have a COVID test every week, right?
Sure.
And so still. And so I missed this one day. So they said, oh, well, you have to just go to one of these, like, free clinic places. Okay. So I Google it. It says you can come in for, you know, just, like, walk in. You don't have to make an appointment. So I walk in, and I'm not kidding you guys. There's nobody there.
Mm-hmm.
And the woman standing right when you walk in goes, "Do you have an appointment?" "No." And she goes, you have to make an appointment." I go, "But it said walk in." She goes, "Yeah, but you still have to make one. So you can go back outside and scan the little digital thing on your phone." I go, "You're joking me right now." She goes, "No." I go, "You want me to walk outside?" "Yeah." So I walk out. I go, "Watch this." And I looked at her through the glass, through the door.
Never broke eye contact.
No,
this sounds like a real Bateman.
I know. I was so angry. I took the picture of the thing, and I'm filling it out, just giving her evil looks while I'm filling this out. I log in all my information. I walk in. She goes, "Can I help you?" I go, "Yeah." She wasn't even kidding. She goes, "Do you have an appointment?"
Was it Edie McClurg from Ferris Bueller?
I go, "Wait, this is not happening. This is like a joke." So she goes, "Yeah, I have an appointment." She goes, "Right over here to a line that doesn't exist." And then this guy at the front desk, he's like, "Do you have an appointment?" I go, "Yes, I do." She's like, "Great." And then he tells me to go wait in this other line. There's no line. It's just a thing to go get tested.
They're really missing the communist nature of what is taking place here. You need to get a test for your work. and you have to scan the QR code. You have to go through the procedure. This is like secret. Yeah, this is the merchant class in complete compliance and obedience with the government, taking your information, passing it on, making sure we know everything about you, fill out more information, stand in line. It's funny now because he has to do a test for his theater. It's not going to be so funny when it's for food and other things.
Well, a couple of things. This is reminiscent of some comedy bits I've seen where, you know, the person says, it goes to order at the window, and the guy says, this is the pickup window. You got to go to the ordering window. And so the guy goes over the ordering window, same guy. Says, okay, I'll take your orders. And then, you know, I mean, in other words, it's a facade. It's bull crap. And that's what was going on with this. But I think they missed it. And this is a stretch, but it's an interesting theory. I think they missed the communist nature of it, of the bull crap, the phony baloney bureaucracy, the phony go out and do this when you could just do it right here in front of me. Because they're in New York, and New York has been turned into a communist city state.
Well, we are going to New York tomorrow, so I can't wait to bring a full report after we arrive tomorrow in the communist state of New York. But there's more, man, with these QR codes. This is a quickie.
Possible sign of the future in sports. Check out the jerseys worn by the University of Central Florida's football team during their spring game. Unique QR codes. Replace numbers on their backs. Fans can scan the codes to learn more about the players.
Technology, I tell ya.
Yeah, I tell ya. How long before we have to wear a QR? This is better. A yellow QR code is better than a yellow star. So you can just, you know, just let me scan you. So it was normal. We scan football players.
We should all have the QR codes on our...
On our clothing. Yeah. Yes. On our clothing.
They have a badge. So they can make square badges. They make square badges.
Yeah.
Button pins.
It's perfect.
And you pin one on and it's your QR code. And you have to have the right one or you can get fined.
Yeah. Yes. It's going to be great. It's perfect. Ugh. Let me see. Oh, no, I don't think I have anything else on COVID. I mean, it's just kind of where we're at still. You know, I know that the mask mandate will not be overturned. That's not for now. That's for future use. And they're still working on some vaccines, but it's kind of taking a back seat, but still pushing. We got cases. Do you think that we'll have an outbreak by the summer, or we're just going to wait until fall as usual?
I'm not looking forward to or seeing an outbreak coming. I think things are over. I predict this.
I'm not talking about real. I'm talking about politically driven.
Well, let's see. The midterms are coming. The primaries are coming in June. They're gonna. I don't think they're gonna do anything because I think they have mixed. Input from the specialists that, you know, the whether you call them these political strategists that come on the TV, but they have these political strategists and they're all going to talk to each other and say, should we do an outbreak? I mean, we could do it, but was that going to hurt our chances? And they're not going to do anything. They're not going to do anything. They can't take a chance of it. They're already in trouble.
Yeah, I think that...
I mean, the one thing I could say, if I was a strategist, I'd suggest the following. Look, this is a risky one because we're in trouble. I'm a Democrat strategist just for this purposes of this argument. We're kind of in trouble. Everyone kind of knows we're in trouble. We're going to lose a lot of seats. We're going to lose probably the House for sure and the Senate probably also. So Biden's going to be... Well, that's pretty good because Joe's, you know, does a lousy job anyway. So it'd be great. That way we can blame the Republicans for nothing happening. But do we want to lose that much power in these hearings and all the rest that we've been doing? Because it'd be flipped. Everyone will be run by the Republicans now. There's one thing we could do. We could have a pandemic redo and then shut down, make people stay inside again and force mail-in ballots because we know how that works and we can control the outcome. That's the only shot we have.
No. They have one other shot. The one other shot, and it's on deck. I mean, if you follow the logic of the World Economic Forum, but also just we need to do something to curtail the inflation. The last, what we, you know, we've explained it with Putin's price hike. We tried to stop, we, the central banks and whoever else involved, douchebags of the world, locked down the economy, suppressed everything. That was really trying to keep inflation out of sight. The next thing on the agenda is the cyber pandemic. And 60 Minutes is right there.
Tonight, there's growing concern about Russian threats here at home. U.S. authorities warn that the Kremlin could launch cyber attacks on American soil. Experts say this could impact everything from public transit to banks to the energy sector. For 60 Minutes, CBS's Bill Whitaker spoke with Dmitry Aperovich, the Moscow-born co-founder of the cybersecurity company CrowdStrike and a member of the Homeland Security Advisory Council.
I just need to stop here for a second. So it's clearly Putin, who's driving the forthcoming bringing down our electric grid and anything else, banking sector, you name it. So let's talk to the guy who was born in Russia, is in Ukraine, and it works for CrowdStrike, one of the most controversial.
This wasn't CrowdStrike, it was some other hokey operation.
No, CrowdStrike.
Mitch, is that what she said? I thought she said something else.
No, listen.
Whitaker spoke with Dmitry Aperovich, the Moscow-born co-founder of the cybersecurity company CrowdStrike and a member of the Homeland Security Advisory Council.
I thought she said CrossStrike.
No, it's CrowdStrike, the same people.
Yeah, CrowdStrike. We know them. We've been following them since day one.
Yeah. So let's get a Russian-born guy. I'm just going to be a douche about it. You know, a Russian-born guy who operates from Ukraine. Or did operate. This is where CrowdStrike was founded, in Ukraine. There's still plenty of belief that the DNC server that Seth Rich got killed over, I'm just going to say it, is still in possession of CrowdStrike. Anyway, let's hear what he has to say about this horrible threat that is looming.
So of all of these things they can do, what is the one that troubles you the most?
An attack on the oil and gas industry, where they go after the safety systems again, and it can cause cascading effects and fires and potential explosions, and people die.
It would require a response from us.
I'm gonna disagree with this thesis of yours as soon as you, if you want to finish this clip or not. This is not a strategy that Democrats can employ.
Oh, I didn't say it was the Democrats. I specifically said this is about the financial state of affairs and they need to curtail inflation.
Oh, no, I'm talking about the Democrats not getting destroyed in the this is what I started off with, the theory that if you're a strategist,
yes,
you want to get crushed in the midterm.
If we shut down things, then you're right back to paper ballots. And who knows what else will close down if something really happens. I'm just saying that we have been promised the cyber pandemic. Yeah. I take Klaus out.
No, you're right. We've been promised it. No one's delivered.
Yeah, so let's listen to what's coming.
And it can cause cascading effects and fires and potential explosions and people die.
It would require a response from us that, as you were saying, could escalate.
It absolutely would.
Not just a cyber war, but a real war.
It's a real concern. And the reality is that we have seen the Russians in cyberspace do some things that we thought were just nuts, that were so provocative, so escalatory, that sometimes you look at that and you say, who's controlling these guys? You know, when the United States launches operations, there's an army of lawyers that is going to be approving every step of that operation and asking, are you going to cause any civilian casualties? Are you going to do anything that's disproportionate? They don't have any of that in Russia. And that can lead us down a very dark path.
I'm calling bull crap on this.
Boy. That's a great
clip. We have an army of lawyers when we're doing cyber operations to make sure it's on the up and up. If it's really war, then the rules are off the table. There's more to this.
Bill Whitaker joins us now from New York. That sounds really alarming.
Alarming.
You point out that the Russians have already targeted a refinery in the past, right?
Yeah, right.
Yes, they have, Nora. In 2017, Russian hackers launched a cyber attack against a huge oil refinery in Saudi Arabia that targeted those safety control systems. In this case, the hackers made a small coding mistake, and they ended up shutting down the refinery instead of triggering a deadly explosion.
That doesn't sound like expert Russians.
But the experts have told us Russian hackers learn from their mistakes.
Hey, wait a minute. So we just heard a moment ago that the Russians are the best ever. They do crazy shit. You have no idea how good they are. And now it's like, oh, they made a mistake. What are we talking about? We're talking about what we mentioned on the show for a week and a half ago. This is the new malware that's been discovered.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And do we know, is there any indication that Russians are preparing for a similar cyber attack now?
Well, just last week, the U.S. government issued a warning about a new piece of malware dubbed Pipe Dream. One cybersecurity expert told us the initial targets are liquefied natural gas and electric power sites in North America. The malware is suspected to be of Russian origin and is far more advanced and versatile than what was used in Saudi Arabia.
Okay, before you continue, you have to reiterate what you played it with. I think it was in the last show. One of our guys wrote in, one of our dudes named Ben, who's on this stuff.
Dude's named Ben, protector of megawatts.
And he said that he looked at the code on some of the stuff that seems to be inserted here and there as American.
Yes, he said it certainly didn't look Russian, and he says it looks like our guys. Now, I've received two producer messages that go a little bit against this theory. So what we know about this malware is that it's like a Swiss Army knife, and it can it has rootkits for all these different SCADA and SCATA machines. So they sit in between the command and control of what you want to have happen in your power plant, your boiler temperature control, you know, valves that are open, and the physical world. So between the digital world of how we control things, and then the actual valves that have to be mechanically changed and turned. So the first note we got from one of our producers, his father used to be in the business, and he says, oh, you know, because we mentioned the brand names of these controllers, that these machines that would supposedly were infected with malware. And he says, oh, you know, back in the day, the U.S. government actually introduced malware themselves into the SCADA and PLCs with the intention of sabotaging Iran's uranium enrichment process.
Yeah, we actually talked about that.
Long time ago. And so he says there's malware in all of these systems, and it was put in by the U.S. specifically for the purpose of stopping Iran. Another note comes from one of our producers who says, take a look at the documentary Zero Days from 2016. And it turns out that it's not just the U.S., but really a lot of governments have malware in these machines. So I don't know if we should be concerned, if it's just business as usual, or if it's just a ticking time bomb that anybody can trip. It doesn't seem to be so spectacular right now. Even if this isn't the pipe dream, there's stuff in there that can be tripped by, apparently, multiple governments.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well, we'll find out one of these days.
Yeah.
When the power goes out, but you don't care.
I do not. I'm good. I do not care. No, I'm good, man. I'm totally good.
It's dynamite.
And with that, I'd like to thank you for your courage and say in the morning to you, the man who put the C in SCADA and SCATA systems. Ladies and gentlemen, please say hello to Mr. John C. Dvorak.
Well, in the morning to you, Mr. Adam Curry. Also in the morning to all ships at sea, boots on the ground, feet in the air, subs in the water, and all the dames and knights out there.
What happened to your ecosystem? I miss it. Did you clean it?
When I'm not using the ecosystem, you should have picked this up by now, I thought. That means I had not opened the spreadsheet.
Oh.
And I am busily clicking on things.
Oh, okay. I don't know what you do. I've never seen your studio. I've never been in any, I've been in your living room once. I don't know anything. If I saw you on the street, I wouldn't even recognize you.
Well,
yeah, while you do that, let me say in the morning to the troll room. As far as I know, we have one person from Europe, from Heidelberg, Germany. I was looking at who was.
Hot too.
Here's the Hoff. Let's count him for a second here. Come on, trolls, hands up. Let me see what we got. What are we working with today? Come on. 2178. It's a Thursday. We'll take it. Very nice. Good to see you all, trolls. They hang out at trollroom.io, where you can join. It's free to join. You get right in there. You can listen to the stream, live stream, noagendastream.com, and in the troll room, troll along. Troll each other, troll me, troll. Well, you can't troll John because he doesn't watch. But it's 24/7 the stream, so there's a lot of live live shows, people who do their podcast live, and also repeats or just a great 24/7 stream of good stuff. And I recommend you go check it out, especially if you're a troll.
Hmm? You know, I've thought about not, you know, about actually following the troll room and doing stuff. I mean, Horowitz runs one too, and I don't do it. And I've decided that if I was watching it and we're both watching, I think it would ruin the pacing of the show.
Oh, totally. And you know, and I'll be honest that in the past couple of months, the trolls have not been super helpful. Usually, so I was disappointed when it came to the auto seer. We had no idea what it was about.
Perfect example. I know exactly what you're going to say. They should have included us in right there on the spot.
All I got was, well, it could be a Glock C18, could be, you know, all the, but not that I saw, because I have a third eye that looks at the troll room. And in this case, I was staring right at it, like, we don't know what's going on here. And all I saw.
We've made other on the fly mistakes that the troll room should have corrected, and we've had to do a mea culpa.
You're slagging off, people.
Yeah.
Come on, right. Get on the ball. We love our trolls. And actually, what worked very well, although not in the live situation, was noagendasocial.com. That's where we learned about the auto seers and the Glock switches. Man, you guys are good. And I didn't think we got a lot of, you know, negative corrections. It was like, oh, this is pretty new. These are flooding all the cities, and people had different reports. So it was really good. I was surprised that we had never heard of it before. It's something I would expect our producers to be on top of.
Stock was.
Yeah, we did. Noagendasocial.com is a Mastodon instance. It's on the Fediverse. It's completely open, this protocol. Anybody can start a server. You can register with many Mastodon servers, and then you can follow John C. Dvorak at noagendasocial.com and Adam at noagendasocial.com and join the conversation. And I think we're going to open up the instance again, since, you know, we've purged old accounts once again, people who just go away, and we have our limit at 10,000. I think we'll be able to take a few more people coming up soon. Then we want to thank the artist for episode 1443, titled Elon Sandwich. And no doubt that when we saw the artwork page, this is the submissions done by our producers, noagendaartgenerator.com. One look at the Tonta Neal album art, and you just had to crack up. And this was our president, Joe Biden, with an eggshell on his head with Merry Christmas. And it was, I mean, we both cracked up when we saw this.
Well, I mean, there was a lot of art we liked or could use, but we actually, both of us literally laughed at this piece.
Now, I laughed a little harder for a different reason, because you don't know the context of the eggshell on the head. And I do, because Tante Neal is Dutch. And growing up, I think it may still be on TV somewhere, there was an Italian cartoon, and I'm talking 73 when I think I first saw this. And the Italian cartoon was of a little black chicken, little chick, with an eggshell on its head, just like the one Biden has. And the chick's name was Calimero. And Calimero would always get bullied. And the line was, "Zij zijn groot en ik ben klein en dat is niet eerlijk," which is, "They're big and I'm small and that's not fair." And this was the whole cartoon. And so she put the Calimero eggshell on Joe Biden, a genius move.
Ah.
International success.
I like the dimensionality of our
It was really good. We appreciate it, Tante Neal. Great job. There were, of course, other things that we liked.
I liked Moose's piece, which had Joe Biden in a bunny costume out in front of the White House.
Yeah.
Easter Joe. I thought that piece was funny.
Yeah.
It just looked so silly.
It was. Mm-hmm.
There was a couple of things we were going to discuss, which is Dame Kenny Benz, whose art I use for the newsletter. Her use of clip art is getting to the point which is it's becoming a trope, and we're shying away from it.
John at Dvorak.org.
You're the one who first suggested it.
I don't know anything about that. What do you mean? This is all you.
Okay, never mind.
What I liked was the... Now, we did discuss this. Wait a minute, which one was it?
It was the Easter Bunny, which is a piece I liked a lot. The Easter Bunny creeping up on two scared eggs. And the piece was called Happy Easter.
Right. I see it here. Now, we know that she licenses the clip art, but when I saw it, it's like, it looks like well-assembled clip art. I don't know. It's just a personal thing. I think that because you don't have the... I'm just going to dig the hole deeper here. But because you don't have that element of you creating it quickly on the fly, you know, doing sometimes more... It's almost overproduced. How about that? It's almost like it's too produced to be our album art. Does that make any sense?
Yes, there's a thing about... Yes, this is interesting because we... Well, we appreciate this is interesting from a perspective of and we're not art directors, but we are. And artists never get to hear this kind of conversation that's probably going on constantly.
Yeah.
It's while we like the avant-garde surfer magazine art that we've been picking on and off, it's just wild looking. It's like, wow, this is just extremely creative. That type of art always has kind of a sloppy quality to it that doesn't look overproduced. And overproduced is what Adam means by it. It's pretty much what I think about it too, which is slick to an extreme.
Yeah.
To the point where it's like too slick. And we see it with musical bands. You see this with videos. You see it with on TV once in a while, where something is just like, kind of makes you itch. It's so too slick. These guys are way too professional and they're showing off.
And on the other side of that, we had art by Jordan, the No Agenda with the egg. That was, in fact, just a tad underproduced because I really like that piece.
Well, this is the argument we got into before I sold Adam more or less on the Merry Christmas. We sold each other on that. Biden thing but you were jacked up about this one piece, which was egg. It's called Egg. You were jacked up. Art by Jordan, and it's just No Agenda with the O is a big brown egg. And my complaint was it didn't have an Eastery. These kinds of shows, the special shows especially, we want an Easter, something about Easter. It's got to be some Easter angle. And this egg was not, if it was decorated or something, anything, it was just too much of just an egg. It was clean. It was a clean, very professional, clean looking thing. This is something you'd pay a studio for, as simple as it is. Yeah, you liked that piece. I liked it too, but I was missing that element.
I would say more jitty than jacked up, to be honest.
I was jitty with it.
We appreciate Tantanil, but all of the work that everybody does, and again, this critique is only to make it better. And I think it's a valuable service we send back to the artist.
Let's put it this way: not one of the artists, and we have plenty, have bitched and moaned about our critique. They may disagree with it, and sometimes we'll get a note with an explanation saying, oh, you missed the point, which does happen. But generally speaking, they appreciate it.
Yes.
At least we hope so.
The whole premise of the value for value model, which is what we run on here, is time, talent, treasure. And it has to be a complete feedback loop. And also, you're not called listeners, you're not called fans, you're not called an audience. Some of you are called trolls, rightfully so, but in general, you're all producers. And when someone sends me a clip, I'll be like, okay, you know, if someone goes to the trouble, even they go through the trouble of putting a clip together, if it's no good, I'm going to say, okay, here's what you didn't do right, here's how you can do better in the future. And I don't think anyone takes offense to that, because you're producing. That's exactly what it is. And some producers are just out of sight good. So it's all meant to make the product better. The product is for all. Now, before we get into thanking our executive and associate executive producers, I did want to shill for Podcasting 2.0, as I usually do around this time. And the reason I'm doing it today is if you are listening to this podcast on anything but a modern podcast app or any podcast, you might want to reconsider your choice and use a modern podcast app from newpodcastapps.com. The deplatforming is coming. It's already here. I think Spotify and Apple, these are the two main apps, are going to probably adhere to the policy recommendations from the Brookings Institution, who wrote quite a nice paper. These are policy recommendations for addressing content moderation in podcasts. It's a wonderful piece. You must read this. I'll just highlight one. Debates over content moderation in podcasts hinge primarily on whether and how widely to share so-called lawful but awful content. You see, now we have categories. You like it?
I love it. Lawful but awful.
Somebody dreamed
that one up and they've been sitting on it.
Major podcasting apps, the applications commonly used on smartphones, tablets, and computers to listen and download to podcast episodes, already have policies and procedures in place to deal with blatantly illegal content. Spotify or Apple's podcast won't knowingly distribute an Islamic State recruitment podcast, since doing so would open them to prosecution for supporting a designated terrorist group. How podcasting apps should handle hate speech, misinformation, and related content that is legal but may have harmful societal effects is far less clear. And then they have a quantifier why this is so important. Today, nearly a quarter, John, 25% of the U.S. population gets their news from podcasts.
Mm.
Now you see why everyone's
growing market.
Yep. As that figure continues to rise, the content moderation policies of major podcasting apps will need to mature accordingly. Podcasts are now a mass medium, yet the content moderation policies and reporting mechanisms of many podcasting apps remain remarkably underdeveloped, as do the regulatory frameworks that oversee them. And these two jamokes, who turn out are artificial intelligence data scientists, they are recommending all kinds of algorithmically driven stuff, of course.
Yeah, well, we don't have to worry about that.
No, we don't, because sure, you can probably still get us on Apple Podcasts, not on Spotify, but we will always be available on the Podcasting 2.0 apps, and you should probably consider doing that, besides the fact that you have all of these great extra features, newpodcastapps.com. Now we want to thank our first executive producer of episode 1444, Jeremy Slate from Newton, New Jersey, comes in with $900. He's got a blue box and he's got a purple box. That means stuff is happening with Jeremy Slate. Let's see. Thanks. Here's his note. Thanks to Adam for being, did I say he gave us $900 in support?
Yeah, you did.
Fantastic. Thanks to Adam for being on my podcast.
Where's Newton, New Jersey, I'd ask you.
I think it's Northwest New Jersey. Thanks to Adam for being on my podcast this week. Oh, that's right. Yes, Jeremy Slate.
What podcast was this?
This is, I did it just the other day. He had been hounding me. A very smart man. He approached me and for the reminders, this is the Create Your Own Life podcast. He started reaching out to Tina. So, and Tina's like, hey, you should do this with this guy. And I was like, yeah, of course I will. And, you know me, I still have to do Grimerica. I forget stuff. And then there's no push, and I forget about it. But he was smart, and he went to Tina and got that done. So it was a lot of fun, actually. It was quite a nice podcast. He said, thank you to Adam for being on the podcast. It made me realize that I need to pony up, since I've been listening since about episode 100. I was introduced to the show back in the day by my college professor, Sean Lake, and started my own show in 2015 and later a PR agency that only books podcasts. Command Your Brand. Podcasting has become my life, and I owe it all to you guys. Well, how about that? I have a book coming out on June 21st called Unremarkable to Extraordinary, where I discuss the principles I've learned from people like the former CIA director, Hall of Fame athletes, four-time Indy 500 champ, and even talk about you guys. The Value for Value model in Podcasting 2.0. If you could just give a shout out at getextraordinarybook.com, GetExtraordinaryBook.com. And he wants to call out Sean Lake as a douchebag. Oops.
Douchebag.
Since it's been a long time that he's heard him donate. Thanks for all you do. No jingles, no karma. Cheers, Jeremy Ryan Slate. And I think that this, it doesn't mention it specifically, but I think this brings him to knighthood. It should. Let me just double check. Yes, he becomes Sir Jeremy Slate today. So thank you very much. And top exec, good work.
Interesting. Drew Watkins is next on the list from Waterford, Pennsylvania. And he comes in with 33429. I've been listening since Adam's first appearance on Rogan and have been enjoying the content rent-free for 2 years now. Since the next show day, April 21st, falls on my 29th birthday, I decided it was time to pay up and receive my de-douching.
We've got that for you. Where's my de-doucher? De-doucher!
You've been de-douched.
Over the past 2 years, I've left Arizona and made several cross-country trips before resettling in western Pennsylvania to be near family. It's been fascinating to see the differences from state to state when I travel. The number of people living in fear shocks me, but I have also found solace in just how many people have kept their amygdalas in check and are recognizing the cracks in the narratives we are being told. Northern Indiana deserves a special shout out for having their heads on straight. Okay. It's no wonder there are so many producers and meetups there. I want to give this special in the morning to all the producers who have gone above and beyond to provide meaningful analysis in their notes. The analysis I have heard from the supply chain, agriculture, and defense trades has been second to none. Please play the following jingles. I want to sell some seeds. I don't know about
he wants, it's an Alex Jones, I guess.
I want to sell some seeds, two to the head and Monsanto. Finally, working as a product leader in the startup world, I'm asking for a big dose of the fancy new Yellen jobs karma as I seek to escape the wokeness that has infected so much of the tech sector and find a hybrid position in the Cleveland or Pittsburgh area. Okay.
All right.
Good luck.
So I could not find I Want to Sell Some Seeds. It's something that I'm not familiar with, but I chose something appropriate from the Seed Man.
We're dead already.
You've got jobs, karma.
I like that yelling karma.
Yeah, it's jazzy.
Especially since the moves that the Federal Reserve certainly going to make, not the Treasury, but will be to raise unemployment. Is that the whole idea of if you raise the rates, then the unemployment goes up as well?
You're asking me?
Yeah, I was. You don't know.
I don't know what they're doing.
Anonymous, with our favorite executive producer donation, 333.33, Clifton Heights, Pennsylvania. Haven't had time to listen lately, so this one's for all the epic newsletters, John. Huh. P.S. I read Atlas Shrugged recently and loved it. My husband said you'd have an opinion about this. No jingles, no karma. Love you guys. Umami Mama. Here's my opinion. Umami Mama, you need to be listening. Especially mamas. You got to be listening to the show. But she likes your newsletters, John. They're just not working to get her to tune in. So you need to tweak it a bit. And if you were reading Atlas Shrugged, I can imagine why you were offline for about 3 months. It takes a while to get through it. Thank you very much, Umami Mama.
David Petrow. Oh, what is it? Piotrowski?
Piotrowski, I would say. Piotrowski.
That's right, Piotrowski. In Marcuson, Wisconsin. And I'm sure I got that wrong, too. 333.33, again, our favorite donation, which is the executive producer special. Hi, TM, John and Adam. I realize that today will roughly mark 333 days since listening to the No Agenda pod. That will also be the day of my first donation to the program. So please de-douche me.
Yo, you got it.
You've been de-douched.
The donation accounts for about a dollar a day since my introduction, but it's still not enough to account for all the laughter, ho, 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 and insight you two provide each episode. Thanks for all you do. I'm certain that absorbing vicarious jobs karma from the show helped secure me a dream job after a recent move to Wisconsin with my smoking hot fiance, Cindy. The karma's not a joke, folks. If possible, could you provide a little desperately needed house buying karma for us and all the home seeking no agenda listeners out there? Thanks again, gents. Love is lit.
You've got karma.
Another 33333 from Commas, Washington, from Brian Kashas. Kashas? I think it's Kashas. In the morning, gents, been a listener since the first Rogan appearance.
Rogan donation.
Please de-douche me.
You've been de-douched.
I've hit several people in the mouth and will continue to spread the word. Keep doing what you do. No jingles, no karma. Happy Easter, Brian from Commas, Washington. Thank you, and happy belated Easter to you, Brian.
Matt, 333.33 in Waycross, Georgia. Been on board for a little over a year now, heading towards knighthood with his first contribution. I need a de-douching.
You've been de-douched.
And I need a screw your freedom, Matt in Waycross.
Screw your freedom.
Okay. Next up, we have Addison Todd. Oh, I'm Addison Todd. Has it been a while since we've heard from Addison Todd? Feels like it. Chesterfield, Missouri, 333. Thank you, Addison. Keep breaking the spells of the M5M mind control machine, and may God bless you for your work. Producers and douchebags, happy 420. Yesterday morning, I went on the morning show of KRVL, like the Rock of Texas in Kerrville, which is a small hill country radio station. It was old school, John. This was a morning show. The studio had all the posters and crap on the wall. They had bells, slide whistles. It was amazing to be and live. You could hear. You had the headphones. You heard the FM sound of the station. And we celebrated 420. It was very fun to be on the radio for a little bit.
I noticed now that you mentioned it that not one person took us up on the 420 donation.
Yeah, because they're all LARPers, man. They don't actually love the holy herb. No, they're LARPing. Do yourselves a favor and save 33. Oh, here we go. Of course, now I know who Addison is. Do yourselves a favor and save 33% on Ebels CBD with your code NOAGENDA at ebels.com, EABLES. And he says, explore my catalog of podcasting 2.0 compatible podcasts at tripodbroadcasting.com. Most importantly, piss off the elite and donate to No Agenda, the best podcast in the universe. A few jingles, please. Mac and cheese. My kids love it. Sing it nonstop. As screw your freedom and a no. Anything else? That's good. We got it for you.
Living the mac and cheese life.
Mac and cheese.
Screw your freedom.
No.
And thank you very much, Addison Todd.
Alexander Nuttall in Portsmouth, Virginia, 333. And he says, thank you from OGFOMK, OGFOMK. What does that stand for? Don't know. Original something.
I don't know. Well, it's OGFOMK.com. So maybe if I look at the website, I'll figure it out.
We love your show. It's not more than one person. And you have picked up where we left off. In 1988, we started a zine. And that's what you're doing. Maximum Rock and Roll is our granddaddy. Your work deserves many Satoshis. Stay amygdala small, my friends. F-R-E-N-S. Okay.
This is interesting. All right.
It's all in zine talk.
Yes. Oh, I'm looking at it right now. It is a zine. It's the OG FOMK Arts Constructive Technology Aggregate. Whoa. Let me see what they got here. Buddha and Bitcoin, cry for help from Ukraine. All right, interesting. I'll put that in the show notes for you. Thank you very much. Dexter Bonaparte is in Toronto, Ontario, Scandinavia, 319.44. What is that? Do you think that's a specific number, or is that a translate from the dollary dues? Do you know, do you have any idea, if, is this the Canadian amount?
No, that would be lower than that if it was Canadian.
Or maybe,
I have no idea.
Maybe he sent in 400 and it turned on to maybe he sent in 1,000 and that's only 390.
Maybe it's 420. It's possible. More likely be. 420 than anything.
No note, but jingle request. This is odd. Fauci wheeze, then a yum. Do we have a, isn't it beautiful yum? I'm thinking. I don't think we have just yum.
Yeah, I don't know if we have just yum.
Okay, beautiful yum. Half second pause. Then Fauci wheeze again, and then JCD, yeah. Let's try it. I don't know if this is any good. Pause.
Beautiful. Yum.
Oops, and then it didn't work.
Yeah. No. Now you're ad-libbing.
No, that's the same jingle. I'm not ad-libbing anything. That's the only, yeah.
No.
Yeah, it goes right into it, yeah.
Oh.
Thanks for the accusation.
Well, this wasn't an accusation, it was a compliment. Lisa Lynch in Foxborough, Massachusetts. 300. This is for my 419 birthday of three people. My father, who's been 88, my husband, who is 62, and me, who finished my 60th turn around the sun. Yes. I hope you were on Earth when it happened. Yes, we all have the same birthday. Oh, that's interesting.
Well, I guess her dad passed away. He would have been 88.
Yeah, but the birthday date
all is on the same day. Yeah. Point. That's
no jingles, only baby making karma for my daughter, Lisa Lynch in Foxborough.
All right. Baby making karma coming up.
You've got karma.
Anonymous is in Shanghai. Wow. Are you allowed to even communicate from Shanghai? Aren't you locked down like a dog?
This was done as a bank transfer, $253.35. Okay.
That makes more sense.
And so I think you can still do that. I don't know what the deal is.
Well, good. We're happy. We're happy. Well,
he says, if you wish to increase the chance for additional donation from my side, you may also play one clip. The Grouser. I don't know what this is referring to.
I have it. It's from.
You actually did it.
Yes, from episode 491. It's the Grouse. I think that was that the title of it?
Coming soon from No Agenda Films.
Oh, brother.
A journey into the mind of a curmudgeon.
I complain endlessly.
The Grouser.
Bullcrap.
Prepare to be buzzkilled.
Shut up.
I don't even remember this.
I've gone back and listened to it. You know, we had a whole different opening on show 200. That was like produced specifically for show 200. It was just completely off the wall.
No idea.
Yeah, and this the same thing. It's like we've done so many shows now that most of them are blank.
but it's the weirdest things that I will remember. Like you play a clip from the Brzezinski child about that's our job from 2017. That's 5 years ago. Boom, I got that one.
Yeah,
but this the Grouser,
because it's actually content related. This other stuff is kind of ancillary, so it's easy to forget.
I like it though. That's our movie trailer, I guess.
Yeah, I guess.
Coming soon on Netflix. That's the level of content we can afford. The Grouser. Thank you, Anonymous from Shanghai. Sir Steve, Knight of the Southern Skies. Southern Skies note, it says. On Southern Skies, I think. 250. This is these are associate executive producers, I should have said. Cranbourne East in Victoria. Australia, thanks to you both for so many amygdala shrinking episodes since my last donation. This $250 brings me a step closer to Baronhood. No jingles, no karma, but I would like to give a quick shout out to producers in Heber Springs, Arkansas. Arkansas, of which there seems to be many. I'm an Australian, but was fortunate to have spent a couple of years living there in my younger days. Beautiful country, great people. Hopefully, I can escape the world's largest prison island soon and make another visit. A meetup shall be in order. All the best, Steve Fisher in Melbourne, Australia. I thought that you could leave now. And I know that people were leaving Australia and flying to the United States.
Yeah.
Or maybe he has not accepted the vaccine into his life. That's possible.
Yeah, that's possible. A couple here. Lisa Tatro in Columbia, Missouri, 250. No jingles, no karma. Thanks for all you do. And then I have the anonymous donation from Lake Oswego, Oregon, of $250, which incorporates an actual piece of paper. It says, keep me anonymous. Okay, we do that. No jingles, just jobs and health karma for all. Many thanks to you both for an outstanding product. Please keep it up. Cheers and warm regards. Aw.
Jobs, 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 and jobs. Let's vote for jobs. You saw karma.
Ah, there's Brian Skelton. We know Brian. Brian has been a producer for a bit now, and he's I met him through Mackenzie Kelly, the councilwoman in Austin. Brian is in Cedar Park, 233.67 in the morning. One of my best accomplishments in life, he says, was receiving a hit in the mouth. This show has done more for me than therapy ever has. The No Agenda community is large, but the fraternity is close. I'm so appreciative of the friends I've made within the borders of Gitmo Nation. I won't name names, but you know who you are. Two of you co-host a husband and wife show, and the other one has made me late to work twice because we couldn't get off the phone. John is on the list too, even though he thinks I don't like him.
I don't know him.
This donation brings me to the round table. Hey, accounting below. I'd like to be knighted as Sir Brian with an I. As for cuisine, I'd like Eagle Rare Bourbon on the Rocks and Circle K McRibs, but I'm mostly here for the hookers and blow. Aren't we all? I can't wait to hang out with all the knights and dames in Charleston. Yes, this is May 16th, Charleston, South Carolina. He will be there as well. Much love and karma to all from FEMA Region Number 6, the soon-to-be Brian with an I, formerly known as Brian from Cedar Park, formerly known as Douchebag. And we're going to give you a goat karma there for you. No, you didn't ask
You've
for it.
You've got karma.
Cynthia Ulietta, I'm guessing, in Candia, New Hampshire, 216.99. Hi, John and Adam. Thanks for all the laughs. And thanks for not having found your exit plan quite yet. And shout out to my fellow Gitmo Nation homies in New Hampshire. I'll see you soon during the Grokfest, New Hampshire, Grokfest NH. For an awesome No Agenda meetup at Club Conspiracy.
Wow.
When you see the synthesizer, the super secret code word is Gitmo, short for Grok in the Morning. Details at grokfestnh.com. RSVP, a site at Area 51, FEMA Camp 33, or Bohemian Grove before they're all gone.
I don't know.
For jingles, may I please have I Love Bugs, followed by a Too Delicious to Believe, Hillary. Thank you for your service.
Mm. Tastes like poop.
It's almost too delicious to believe, my friend.
Okay. Brian Torres is next. He's in Miami Beach, Florida, $214.15. Greetings from Miami Beach, gentlemen. I'm making this value for value contribution of $21,415 on behalf of my son, Nico, who started his first lap around the sun 15 years ago on April 21st. Nico is the best son a father could have, and we have gotten through the last 2 years of pandemonium. That's a good one. By enjoying No Agenda together. You have given us many laughs and much to ponder. I would like to think that Nico has become more of a free thinker when it comes to questioning the official line on just about everything, thanks to No Agenda. At any rate, Nico, with an assist from Mom, made a surprise switcheroo donation on my behalf on my birthday last year on 9/11. So it's my turn to return the favor for his first donation, first production credit. So this goes to Nico.
Yeah.
Switcheroo.
The switcheroo.
May I ask for an official de-douching?
Sorry. De-douching first.
You've been de-douched.
De-douching. Birthday call out. You're getting that. and a big fat goat karma from the birthday boy for the birthday boy. Thank you. All the best, Brian Torres in Miami Beach.
You've got karma.
Yeah, I like that. We always feel it's good for families to know agenda together. That's very good. Happy to see that. Chris Collins, surrounded by idiots, 211-12, nice palindrome, Forsyth, Missouri. John and Adam, here's a palindrome made of ducks and dicks. It's the ducks and dicks donation. This donation is a switchy poo. I would like this executive producer credit to go to my beautiful wife, Tammy. Tammy Collins. Okay, hold on a second. Switcheroo being implemented.
Two in a row.
Yes. This is the first installment towards her damehood, as I can no longer be married to a peasant. A pleb. Close to a deplorable, I tell you. Oh, that's very cute. Thank you for all you do. It's much appreciated. Robot Lords of Tokyo Smile Taste Kittens. No jingles, no karma. Loves a slit. Oh, my goodness. Yours truly, surrounded by idiots. Thank you. We've done it. We've got the switcheroos in.
Next is Jamie Buell in Vista, California. $200.44. And simple show donation for Jamie Buell from Vista.
Nice. Thank you very much. Viscount Dirty Dick Bangs from Washington, Delaware. $200 associate executive producership. But this is to wish Colton Reed Bangs a happy third birthday. You know, the Viscount has 18 children, I think. So it's they're always in the donation list for the birthdays. Colton is the caboose in Team ABC. He loves playing with his big brothers, Barrett and Archer. His favorite jingle is the goat scream. Thanks for all you do, Viscount Dirty Dick Bangs of DC. We'll add that goat into some karma for him. Happy birthday.
You've got karma.
Now we have Lindsay Fox, $200 from Thorpe, Wisconsin, sending message in separate email. I don't have it.
I'm taking a quick probably look. Not. No, I do not have a Lindsay Fox.
So I will move on to Joshua McLean. He'll be the last associate executive producer. $200 from Brian. Brian, I tell you. Brian, Texas.
College Station, baby. A&M. Reveille.
Is that in Bryan, Texas? I thought it was College Station, Texas.
It's Bryan College Station. They actually put them together.
Oh. Who knew? We learn something every day on the agenda.
Yesterday.
Thank you both for the excellent work you do. I am now freshly de-douched with a fresh dose of karma under my belt. I want to thank all the producers for the fine work that they do. I think he thinks by giving the donation he got de-douched without the de-douching.
Well, that's not right. We got to do that properly.
You've been de-douched.
I want to thank all the producers for the fine work they do to make the show the very best podcast in the universe. I'm working towards my official credentials as a historian with a degree in U.S. history with a minor in religion. One of my history professors at Cal always said, you want to understand American history, you can't understand it at all if you don't read the Bible from cover to cover.
No, that's probably
true. That was a famous historian named Winthrop Jordan. Through this scholarly training, I hope to add valuable content in the future. I can say with standing that the quality of the education of our children is lacking. especially with regards to history and civics. I ask basic questions to members of my staff regularly, and they have no idea what I'm asking. Many are currently in college, and it's just heartbreaking. Again, thank you both for all the no agenda community. Jingles, I like karma, 73s. Oh, he's also a ham from G5PDU, 73s.
Kilo 5 Alpha Charlie. I did want to say about the education. Someone sent me a worksheet from, I think it's third graders in the Netherlands, and it's a screenshot, and it's in the top left-hand corner. I put it in the show notes. There's a little logo of the World Wildlife Fund with their panda, and it's in the school book. So this is sponsored by the World Wildlife Fund, or it was put in there by them. I'm not quite sure what the relationship is, other than this was a worksheet, and you have two assignments on this worksheet. One is to color all of the bugs that are shown on the page. It's outlines of bugs. Color their legs and wings red, and then draw a sandwich with the insect you would like to eat. And it literally says, printed on this page, Insekten lekker, which is translates to insects scrumptious for third graders.
Oh, my God.
That's sick, isn't it?
It's bordering on the sick. This is the reptilians that are running the place.
Yeah, they want us to. They want us to.
Well, they want us, bugs. They don't. It's not so noticeable when they're eating
when they're eating bugs. Thank you very much to these executive and associate producers.
You got to give Joshua's karma.
Got it. Sorry. Good catch.
You've got karma.
Now we thank them. Time, talent, treasure is all we ask for, and you guys do it, and we've been doing it for a long time, and we like it. We like doing it with you, so please continue that. If you've never been an executive producer or an associate executive producer, maybe now's the time to think about it while the collapse is not here yet. So do it quick.
Dvorak.org/NA.
And thank you again for supporting episode 1444 of the No Agenda Show. We'll be thanking more producers. Remember, these credits are real.
Our formula is this. We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
Order. Screw your freedom.
Shut up, slave.
Yes, sir.
Well, we've got some, I wanted some, do some Ukrainian stuff.
Yes, I have some Ukrainian stuff to do, too.
First, I want to read us, I got the debrief today. This is the newsletter I get from, by Defense One.
Yeah, talk a little more into the mic, John. You're really turning away.
I got to move the mic, actually, because I can't read this at the same time. This is a debrief from Defense One, and they talk about, I guess they're pushing for another. We talked about the 800 million additional. It says it also pushes the total U.S. military aid to Kiev over the $4 billion mark since Biden took office and more than $3.4 billion since the invasion began. It looks as though the next batch of aid will require some congressional approval. We're just throwing money at these guys.
So what I heard was there's another. And these are packages, remember? Packages. So we had an $800 million package, and now there's another $800 million package coming?
I don't know. It's taking it to $3.4 billion. Could be. This is the one that includes the 72 155 millimeter howitzers, which we're told are just Marine surplus. 144,000 artillery rounds. Of course, you know, they're not shooting these rounds into Russia. These are rounds that are being shot into Ukraine to further wreck the place.
Yeah, but is that really true, John?
I mean, they could be selling them. That's what I would
do. Well, here's what I'm thinking. Because the thing that irritates me is package. They keep talking about package. What if the packages don't actually get unpacked in Ukraine? You know, this whole thing could be a weapons smuggling operation to overthrow some, you know, take charge of some country in Africa.
Yeah, I.
It would not surprise me. This is weird.
This will come out in the wash.
Yeah, this is very weird. This packages of weapons.
Now, there's one little thing in this report that really got my attention, because it's something screwy about it, and it's not being explained by the mainstream. Related reading, it says that this is a quote: Russia says it controls Mariupol, but Ukrainian troops hold out in a steel plant, via the Wall Street Journal reporting. And Putin claims a Mariupol win, but won't storm the Ukrainian holdout. And that's what the Associated Press says. And this is update. Russia is planning to parade through Mariupol for a victory day on May 9th after making grinding progress against the remaining Ukrainian defenders in Mariupol's Azovstal steel works. Now, so these guys, the last of the brigades of the, you know, the Ukrainian the Nazi regime or whatever it is, these soldiers, they know enough that this steelworks is so important to the Russians that they can go in there and hold up. Because normally you think, oh, these guys they're all here. Let's just flatten the place.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you do that?
Sure.
But they refuse to do that. So there's something up with this steel plant. I would like some mainstreamer, somebody that does reporting, somebody that might be over there, tell me what the hell's going on here with this steel plant and why the Russians can't get these guys out of there and why then don't they just flatten it?
Well, the guy that would have been able to answer that for you has gone missing. Have you ever seen Gonzalo Lira and his updates?
They Asimov, whatever the name of this group is, Asimov. They took Azov, him, they captured Azov. Him and killed him.
We're not sure, but I have a report on him.
Now, a Chilean-American journalist who's been covering the conflict from inside Ukraine has reportedly gone missing in the city of Kharkov. Fellow reporters now fear for his life, saying Gonzalo Lira has been out of contact since last Friday. Meanwhile, one of Ukraine's nationalist leaders has posted a series of tweets in his private account, mockingly claiming the journalist might have been abducted and killed by, quote, some guy with the call sign Chili. Gonzalo Lira is 54 years old and has been living in Ukraine for the past few years. He was in Kiev when the conflict erupted in February and then traveled to Kharkov to cover the fighting there. He has repeatedly criticized the Ukrainian government and armed forces for their actions. At the end of March, he tweeted that he called the truth about Zelensky's regime, adding he might disappear, as did other critics of Kiev, some of whom were later found dead.
Yeah, so we don't know exactly.
Yeah, there's no reporting. It's because they
didn't like the guy. They didn't like him.
Well, reporter does his job. This is the risk you take.
Yeah. I don't know if he was a real reporter. He was doing real reporting. But he was not paid by anybody as far as I don't even know what he did, actually, or does. I hope he's okay. Sucks.
He's not okay.
So do you, I have some Ukraine stuff, but are you leading into something here? You got something?
No, I just wanted to start with this because there's these mysteries that are starting to crop up. You pointed out one of them. Where's the stuff going?
Yeah.
They've asked two or three people and they say, well, we can't say it's national security.
Well, no, actually, it's worse than that. I have a quote here. Who was this? I don't know, someone from the Defense Department. We have fidelity tracking the weapons packages. We have fidelity for a short time, but when it enters the fog of war, we have almost zero. The weapons often fall into a, quote, big black hole. Uh-huh. I don't see.
And somebody point out you can barcode them. You could put RFID tags on them. That might help.
I just don't see any evidence of them being used in any warfare. All we see is, well, here's what Russia did. Here's what Russia did. Russia destroyed this.
Yeah, we need more. We need more.
Yeah, need more. I never see them firing. I never see any. I just never see it.
Well, here's the Ukraine renew supplies report.
A senior defense official says 18 howitzers the U.S. promised Ukraine are now arriving in Eastern Europe. As NPR's Greg Myrie reports, the massive artillery guns are seen as critical for looming battles in Eastern Ukraine.
We should probably put QR codes on those howitzers so we could track them. Can you imagine a howitzer with a QR code? Hey, man, we track this down the supply chain.
U.S. flights carrying some of the howitzers arrived Tuesday in an unspecified country near Ukraine, the U.S. official said, adding that more were on the way. The U.S. is already training Ukrainians in a nearby country on how to use the 155-millimeter artillery guns. Ukraine says it desperately needs such heavy weaponry, and Russia is moving more of its own artillery into eastern Ukraine, where ongoing fighting is expected to escalate. The U.S. official said, quote, artillery is going to be critical in this fight. Also, the U.S. has provided spare aircraft parts that have allowed Ukraine to repair and return to service more than 20 of its own warplanes in the past 3 weeks.
So we're sending over howitzers, and, you know, that's been, it's been making, we're making a big deal out of the packages, the weapons packages, but then you get this from Russia.
Meanwhile, Vladimir Putin is showing off the latest addition to his nuclear arsenal, test launching a new intercontinental ballistic missile. He said it's, quote, food for thought for those who threaten Russia.
Why don't we send over some ICBMs to the Ukrainians? Let them light that shit off. Let's see how that goes.
We don't want
to
do that.
During the Oscars, was it the Oscars? No, the Grammy Awards, I'm sorry. The president of Ukraine did a little speech, little thing on video, And he promoted, and throughout the entire show, it was the Stand Up for Ukraine. Stand Up for Ukraine. Remember this? Stand Up for Ukraine.
It was an embarrassment.
Well, it's gotten a little, what's more interesting, actually. Stand Up for Ukraine is a campaign from Global Citizen, globalcitizen.org. These are the people who do the big Kumbaya concert in Central Park that's broadcast live, and mainly Disney-related or ABC, even sometimes CBS, MSN. Maybe it's just all mainstream. If you look at the partners of Global Citizen, I'll just go to the page, read you a couple of the names. We have core partners: Procter & Gamble, Cisco, Verizon, Delta, Live Nation, Accenture, Citibank, Google, Salesforce, Coca-Cola, Weight Watchers, Worldwide Technology, Hilton Hotels Worldwide, Coca-Cola. It goes on and on. So this is a globalist operation, Global Citizen.
Yeah, it's usual suspects, the same kind of sponsors you see on the Olympics.
Lauren Powell Jobs is a big supporter. She gives them a lot of money. And on April 8th, which was recent, hundreds of thousands of Global Citizens came together to stand up for Ukraine, resulting in billions of dollars pledged for refugees. Now, we must act to help prevent the global food crisis that is coming because of this conflict. Let me just repeat that. Now, we must act to help prevent the global food crisis that is coming because of this conflict. And this is in the context of Stand Up for Ukraine. So I'm not sure if they wanted to raise money for Ukraine or for everybody else who's going to be hungry. They do have an impact report, and the top line is the global social media rally brought, this is their campaign, brought together hundreds of thousands of global citizens, including artists, athletes, actors, and creators, to stand up for Ukraine. Their voices and actions help make sure that billions of dollars were committed during a pledge summit to help refugees from Ukraine around the world. Well, this summit was run by the European Union, in fact, by the president of the EU, Starfleet Command herself, Ursula von der Leyen. Here she is, as if she's hosting a game show.
Final tally, I think you are the boss.
No, you are the boss. You are the president. I'm definitely not the president.
Am I supposed to? Okay, let me have a look at the figures I see. So, whoa. We have finally, the world has finally pledged 9.1 billion euros through this campaign. And in addition,
but wait, there's more.
The Commission working with EBRD adds another billion for the IDPs in Ukraine. This is fantastic. So 10.1 euros. And if you say that in dollars, it's even more.
Slight slam at the U.S. So they raised a total of, what it says here, 9.1 billion euros. The global campaign has raised 9.1 billion euros for people fleeing the Russian invasion inside Ukraine and abroad. What I can't find is how they will give this money out. I just can't find it.
You'll never find it.
And what is the point, other than a kumbaya, let's all feel good about what we're doing for Ukraine? Where's the money going? I thought it was for food, for the coming food crisis. So this is a global scale. Something's going on here. There's reasons.
Global scale.
Reasons.
Get money any way you can. These people are scroungers at the highest level that we can only dream about.
That's a good point. They're scroungers.
They're scroungers. They're massive scroungers.
Well, there's another soon-to-be nonprofit, is not yet registered as a 501c3, the Terror Asymmetrics Project. I don't know if you've heard of this. This is quite the operation. The Terror Asymmetrics Project is, in fact, run by Malcolm Nance, former MSNBC contributor. Malcolm Nance always has a big mouth. He's always complaining about... Isn't he the former CIA, FBI, LMNOP guy?
Yeah, he's something like that.
So
look him up while you're talking.
Yeah, so he apparently went to Ukraine to join the fight, and he appeared on MSNBC. The news reports say he left his lucrative job
as a stringer
for him. He's not even invited in the studio anymore. As a stringer for MSNBC, and Joy Reid had him on. Many of you have seen this. It's funny because it's Malcolm Nance, the guy you usually see sitting at home in his office talking crap about anything Republican. Now in full combat gear with an AK-47. Oddly, it seems to not have a charging handle on it. We're not quite sure what's going on with this weapon. It's also strung around his neck with this strap, not really military issue. But he looks the business. He's got his flak jacket on, has big words, Nance. So he's there, and he's in the woods, in the dark, and he's talking to Joy Reid, and he's doing something about this, John.
And joining me now from a secure location in Western Ukraine is
secure location.
Executive Director of the Terror Asymmetrics Project. He is fighting with the International Legion of Territorial Defense of Ukraine. And Malcolm, we just watched that video of you, and Ali Aruzi was attempting to interview you for us to get more information on what you're doing. We saw those cruise missiles fly overhead. So explain to us why you are there and what you are doing.
Well, as you know, I spent quite a bit of time here in the pre-war period. And when the invasion happened, I had friends who were in Donetsk, who were in the Ukrainian army, who were writing to us and telling us, we're not going to survive tonight. We've been hit 500 times. These are graduates of Defense Language Institute. These are my friends. And, you know, as the more I saw of the war going on, the more I thought, I'm done talking. All right. It's time to take action here. So about a month ago, I joined the International Legion here in Ukraine, and I am here to help this country fight, you know, what essentially is a war extermination. This is an existential war, and Russia has bought it to these people, and they are mass murdering civilians. And
before he continues, I just wanted to mention, because it's kind of odd that he says, you know, I was here pre-war. What were you doing in Ukraine? Were you on vacation? No, I had friends there. Where were his friends? Let me tell you. His friends were at the Defense League Institute. That's just glossed over. That is a United States Department of Defense educational and research institution. Okay? Spooks. Spooks in Ukraine.
Read his bio. Before we continue. Malcolm Nance, born in 61. He's 60. So he's 61, actually. He will be 61 in September. So he's old for a foot soldier. But he's an American author and media pundit on topics related to terrorism, intelligence, insurgency, and foreign affairs. He's a former United States Navy senior chief petty officer.
Does that mean he manages the
Navy
pencils?
Guy.
He manages pencils?
He's a he's a Navy guy. No, he's could be a pencil pusher or a paper pusher, specializing in naval cryptology, which is that a specialty? Okay. Nance is an intelligence and foreign service analyst foreign policy analyst who frequently discusses the history, personalities, and organization of jihadi radicalization in Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State of Iraq and Levant, Southwest Asian. And this guy, you know, we always like to spot the spook.
Mm-hmm.
This guy seems like a phony.
Like a phony spook?
Yeah, a phony spook.
A LARPer. He's a LARP spook.
He could be a LARPer. He wrote a bunch of books that maybe he wrote, maybe he didn't, as we've talked about before. In 2014, he found and became the executive director of the Terror Asymmetric Project on Strategy, Tactics, and Radical Ideology.
Which is basically a one-page website with a PayPal donate link.
Yeah. And so then he's now, and it shows in his background, military career, United States Navy, and then he supposedly joined. He's a member of the terrorist defense forces in Ukraine.
Yes,
this is a screwball story.
Well, I think that the guy is sad. Sadly, he may actually believe he's making some kind of difference. But I think he was kind of pushed out of MSNBC. They were not having him on, and so now he decides he's got the terror. Terror Asymmetrics Project, which is, I guess, to fundraise for himself. And he's got a little office over there in Ukraine. I mean, I saw the whole piece. He's got a little office. He's got gear, and he's got he's looking impressive, doing stuff on the laptop. He's doing something about the situation, John. Weapons packages are not enough. You can send $3.5 billion worth of weapons to Ukraine, Without Malcolm Nance, nothing will go right.
Fight, you know, what essentially is a war of extermination. This is an existential war, and Russia has bought it to these people, and they are mass murdering civilians. And there are people here like me who are here to do something about it.
And we have some video here. This is some video that was shot by Ali's team of yourself with some supplies and the things that you are working on while you're there. We know there are about 20,000 people from 52 countries that are currently in Ukraine and have been there from the start of the war. What are international troops like yourself? What are you all tasked to do?
Well, we are here for one purpose and one purpose only, and that is to protect the innocent people of Ukraine from this Russian aggression. And, you know, it's not a conventional war, Joy, even though you have two armed forces going head to head here. What you have is you have another group. I won't even refer to the Russians as an army. Just using mass heavy weapons that are used in combat against civilians.
Now, this is where I think he misspoke. He says you have two sides, Ukraine and Russia. Then you have another group who are just murdering civilians. Is he referring to the Azov battalion?
Oh,
because I think he misspeaks here. Let's check it.
What are you all tasked to do?
Well, we are here for one purpose and one purpose only, and that is to protect the innocent people of Ukraine from this Russian aggression. And, you know, it's not a conventional war, Joy, even though you have two armed forces going head to head here. What you have is you have another group. I won't even refer to the Russians as an army, just using mass heavy weapons that are used in combat against civilians. They are destroying infrastructure. And then you find that they go to the cities and they massacre men, women, and children.
Yeah, it just went on from there. But the best part was, and she talked about it, just before that, they showed him being interviewed, which looks like it would be a Ukrainian city. It's actually, the city's bustling, you know, everyone in the background, and he's being interviewed. And then suddenly they realize that there's something going on. Are we in an air raid? And as was stated, oh, I saw the ICBM. And Joy read him and says, we saw the ICBM. Well, I watched the video. They show the sky, but you'd never see the ICBM. There's no little circle. Look, here it is. I, you know, did it frame by frame. You can't see it. Not denying that it was there, but this piece of him all of a sudden out on the street, and then it's like, oh, wait a minute. Are we in an air raid? And then he's jumping up, and then he becomes Malcolm Nance, you know, like War of Worldcraft, you know, what is it? What is the other one? Call of Duty. And he's barking out commands, and it's like he's calling out stuff that makes us know that he really is on top of what's happening in warfare.
Ukraine's unique territory. Is that going down?
No. But I've never seen a fast mover. Where'd it go?
Yeah, I heard one boom.
Are we in an air raid?
Yes.
Yeah, we are. We had the air raid. So there's another coming.
Wait, there'll be three. Yeah. Stand by. We're getting hit. That's a 500-pound bomb.
Let's get the body on.
That's. It's coming from the east, southeast. So those are caliber anti-ship missiles. They're striking to the west. Striking to the west. That's two.
What
we should
get
at least one more. That wasn't a plane. It was a cruise missile.
That was a cruise missile.
Yeah. Wait for one more. They're fired in 30-second intervals. They fire them in 30-second intervals. Smoke.
There we go.
Stand by. Three, cruise missile, caliber. Stand by.
You gotta see this. Smoke, cruise missile, caliber, stand by. And he's just pointing at an empty sky with the city just going on before him. You know, everything's fine. It's really, really odd that this is taken seriously. Actually, I want to enhance this little thing a little bit, make him sound a little more official.
Smoke, stand by. Three, cruise missile, caliber.
Skybird, this is Dropkick with a red dash alpha message in two parts.
Malcolm Nance on the scene, ladies and gentlemen. And he's not the only person who wants to go to Ukraine to fight. I mean, this is now rampant within our establishment.
Should this President Biden...
Sorry.
Have Mo explain to you what a shuck and jive artist is and use it in terms of this guy. Now, I also think you might be seeing some people joining up because this is the last opportunity to do a throwback to the Spanish Civil War or the Spanish Revolution, the one where the good guys fought the Nazis in Spain.
Yeah.
And maybe some sort of hero complex. You know, I'm not sure.
Without doubt, the international Ukrainian forces or whatever they call it is real. There's Americans going over. There's a lot of people who are just they love going over and they're jacked up about fighting. Like, cool, man, I'm going to go fight. I'm going to kill somebody. And I will point out, you remember when Joe Biden was talking to the 82nd Airborne, saying, by this time tomorrow, you'll see the people in the streets of Ukraine? And everyone laughed at him because they were going to Poland? I have very reliable information. The 82nd Airborne is in Ukraine, or at least members of them are in Ukraine, and they are advising.
I'm sure they are. I'm sure there's somebody there. There's got to be. I don't know what the point of this keeping this thing going is. It's a good
Putin's price hike. Putin's price hike.
I was just going to say that. Yeah. Same thing.
We got to keep
this
it up.
This makes it, we'll take this right to the midterm elections and blame everything on Putin because they got Trump out of office using this trick. So let's see how stupid the American public is. Do you think they'll buy into the Putin price hike? Jan Psaki says it. Biden says it. They use this term, Putin price hike.
Let's go to Maxine Waters, another potential shuck and jive artist.
Should President Biden heed the request of President Zelensky of Ukraine and go to Ukraine?
Well, let me just tell you that this president has been awfully responsible for making sure that we get weapons and equipment. And just recently, I think another $800 billion in equipment going to Ukraine. We're all working as hard as we possibly can. I believe with all of the intelligence that we have, if Putin knew that Biden was coming, he would try to have him killed. So we have to be very careful about that. We want our president to be safe as we do the work that we can do to help out in every way that we can.
This is about Biden coming over.
Ukraine.
So if not President Biden, which American official do you think should go to Ukraine to see with their own eyes what's happening there?
I do believe that officials should volunteer if they want to go and make that trip. But I don't think that we should absolutely try and assign or force any of the elected officials to go. But I think there are many of us who would perhaps volunteer to go, and those are the ones that should go.
Wait, there are those of us who would volunteer to go. Would you go? Are you volunteering?
Of course.
Oh,
absolutely.
Go, yeah. I want to see Malcolm Nance and Maxine Waters in camo.
Maxine Waters isn't going.
Oh, she'll go.
Of course I will. She's full of shit, this woman.
She'll go over there. She'll go over there. I believe that.
You want to put $5 on it?
Yeah, I'll take your $5.
Okay.
Yeah, but be careful. By the time we find out next week, that may only be worth $4.
that's the Putin inflation.
So this is, yes, I mean, I think we've kind of seen it now. We have no idea what the truth is. Everybody's lying, but all that we're getting is Putin price hike. And of course, they're now up to 5 million refugees, they say. I don't know. We just don't know. There's no reporting that we can really trust, other than the migrant situation in Europe is not going to improve with 5 million streaming in, and it's not just going to stay in Poland, of course. You seen Sweden? Sweden's imploding again. They're riots, and they're doing the whole blowing up, burning cars on the streets. Sweden.
Well, who's the people that are doing it? Who's behind it?
These are the previous migrants. The Muslims. Migrants.
They're getting ignored or something, and so they're trying to get attention again?
I'm not sure, but it's messy. In Sweden, which is just so weird.
It is.
It's the land of ABBA, land of Roxette.
I got this last Ukraine clip, which is Zelensky. First, he's bragging, even though he needs more stuff. And then it sounds like they're going to go on the offensive.
Mm.
Zelensky's
says the way our armed forces are holding up shows the Ukrainian army deserved to be ranked higher than the Russian army. And we hear this kind of optimism everywhere in Ukraine. A spokesman for the military governor here in Odessa, who asked to be identified only by his first name, Eugene, told NPR that Ukraine might actually go on the offensive in the coming days.
With our package?
They don't need our help that much.
With our package? With the big package?
Take our package and go on the offensive.
Take our package, yeah. So, Ukraine. We really just don't know. Other than Putin's price hike. And we'll see what's next to cover up the horrible state of inflation and financial systems that just don't seem to be functioning very well.
Now, I have no more Ukraine stuff. I can go different directions, but I wanted to take a break and do two NPR clips that are just to me classic.
Are they fun? Fun to listen to?
Well, I don't know. One of them is.
Okay.
One of them is, I never thought I'd ever see it. Now I think that I probably have seen it and I missed it, which is a native ad.
On NPR?
On NPR.
Hmm.
The giveaway that's a native ad, besides its content for Taco Bell, is very creative, very creatively done, but it's curious, and I have it timed out. I have the clip is exactly 2 minutes, not 1:45, not 1:32.
That's always the giveaway is the timing. Now, so a native ad, let's just explain, a native ad would be it's couched as content, as a story. There's probably no disclaimer at the beginning or end that this is a paid for advertisement, which of course we can't really prove, but it's also not in the charter of NPR to take this type of advertising. They're supposed to have underwriting
or advertising, or whatever you want to call it.
Fans of Taco Bell's Mexican pizza received good news this week. The food chain is bringing back the beloved menu item.
You have the two like fried tortillas that are like kind of glued together with the beans or the meat, whatever you want to do.
Oh my goodness. What is she, does she work for NPR? Does she work for Taco Bell?
That's comedian.
No, she's brought in. She's a the outside. She's a source that they use. They introduce her.
Is she a food specialist?
In a back announcement.
Well, she's really horrible.
Fans of Taco Bell's Mexican pizza received good news this week. The food chain is bringing back the beloved menu item.
You have the two like fried tortillas that are like kind of glued together with the beans or the meat, whatever you want to do.
That's comedian and writer Rima Parikh, who wrote an essay professing her love for the Mexican pizza.
The top, there's like the cheese, there's the tomatoes. They used to have green onions. They don't have those anymore.
Of course, there's no such thing in true Mexican cuisine, but Taco Bell's creation has developed a strong following, especially among South Asian Americans. The disappointment ran deep when it was pulled from the menu about a year and a half ago. Taco Bell said it wanted to make way for new menu items. But Parikh was lost without her go-to that she'd even customized.
I would swap out the meat with beans. And then a little bit later on, I started adding potatoes and nacho cheese sauce.
That ability to customize the Mexican pizza is part of what made it popular among South Asian Americans.
People's parents moved here in the 80s and the 90s. They didn't have like a lot of, you know, options for like fast food, especially if like they ate vegetarian, which, you know, you could do for a variety of reasons. Like you don't eat beef or like you're trying to eat halal.
So talk about
that. Hold on a second. You know, if you're a vegetarian, you can eat for a number of reasons. Like, you might not want to eat meat because you're like a vegetarian, or you want to eat halal. Lady, thank you for explaining what vegetarian means.
Parents moved here in the 80s and the 90s. They didn't have like a lot of, you know, options for like fast food, especially if like they ate vegetarian, which, you know, you could do for a variety of reasons. Like, you don't eat beef or like you're trying to eat halal.
So Taco Bell, where you could swap the beef for beans, became the place to go.
Krish Jagadar, who got hooked on the Mexican pizza as a kid, says the spicy flavors also appeal to Indian Americans.
So I think in a lot of ways, it's kind of like as close as they can get to like Indian fast food while still being, you know, obviously part of American culture.
When Taco Bell removed the Mexican pizza from the menu, Jagadar started a change.org petition to bring it back. He says it spread like wildfire.
I'm talking about like old Indian uncles and aunties like that are like sharing it in their groups.
He got more than 170,000 5,000 signatures. And last week, to Jagadar's surprise, Taco Bell got in touch to thank him for stoking the movement and to tell him that the Mexican pizza hits menus again on May 19th. Both he and Parikh have the day marked on their calendars.
Ooh, and an outro music to make it perfect.
Yeah, so, 2 minutes exactly.
Yeah.
What you heard, it says probably should say 2 minutes on your little rundown.
It does.
There.
It's exactly it.
Which is always a sign that it's a native ad because they can't, because these advertising guys that only think in these terms, a minute, 2 minutes, 5 minutes. This was the most pathetic thing I've ever heard on NPR. It was a blatant promotion for some, who knows what this product is. I never even heard of it. The Mexican pizza, is two tortillas, hard tortillas.
Which is necessary.
Two tostadas pushed together.
Yeah.
Okay, now the other NPR, so that's my complaint there.
Well, hold on a second. I just want to understand is it possible that this Rima Parikh, the comedian, that she has the sponsorship deal? I'm just trying to figure out where the money is and where it's going.
No way. No. Maybe it was the Taco Bell people that had her on the hook.
Mm-hmm.
And she may be getting paid by them, and the advertising agencies. We're working with this comic. She's got a lot of good things to say about it. Can you bring her in? And she comes in blathering like a maniac, like you pointed out right away, that she's not even doesn't even fit into the NPR schema, let alone make any sense. But I think that the advertising agency packaged this.
And do we even know if she's funny?
I never heard of her.
Is she Mexican?
I don't know. You're asking crazy questions.
Well, you bring this. No, she's not Mexican. She was even talking about she's Indian, or maybe Pakistani.
This was a promotion to the Indian audience.
I think so too. Yeah.
Wow. Well, good move. I thought kudos to Taco Bell.
Oh, wait a minute. Currently, she's a headline contributor at The Onion. Is this whole thing an Onion joke?
No, it's not.
I would be okay with that. No. Wow.
NPR using it. Well, it makes it funnier.
Is that, in fact, against the rules for NPR to do this?
With the native ad or the Onion?
The native ad. The native ad.
I don't think so. Not anymore. No. I think those rules have all been changed.
Yeah, they don't care. They don't care. All right.
Now, here's the other one. This one that just bugged me. It's a short 32-second bit, which is more in line with what they do. That's a non sequitur. They bring up a topic at the beginning, and they never address it. It's like, well, I thought, the thing is, I really like, it's something, you bring something in, and then you never talk about it again. This is the dog clip. This is the NPR non-sequitur dogs.
There's a saying, you can't teach an old dog new tricks, but a long-lived Florida Chihuahua may be the exception to that rule. According to the Guinness World Records, the tiny Chihuahua named Toby Keith has made it into the record books as the world's oldest living dog. The 7-pound pooch making it to the ripe old age of 21, which in dog years is very old.
Wow.
Canine Toby Keith's owner, Gisela Shore, says he was the last pup of a litter left in a cardboard box in 2001 when she found him. Shore attributes Toby Keith the Chihuahua's long life to genetics, a good diet, and lots of love.
All right, so this is a story about a dog that made it 20 years old.
I had a dog that was 24, so that dogs get older than this dog. And I'm sure there's older dogs than 21 out there, but so it's bull crap. But the premise of the article was, you can't teach an old dog
new tricks.
I'm gonna quote it to you. You can't teach an old dog new tricks. Well, the exception is this dog. And then they tell us about the dog, but what's the new trick?
Not dying, apparently.
I mean, this is the worst piece NPR has ever done.
They messed up the joke. They should have been, it's like roll over, play dead. It's one of the, they should have worked that in there somehow. They're struggling for material.
Well, when they say that you can't teach an old dog new tricks, and we've got a dog that they taught it, an old dog. What's the new trick? They never bring a trick into it.
I'm telling you,
this is the worst clip I've ever collected.
The new trick is to interrupt podcasts by telling one of the hosts the dog's got to go potty.
I'm going to show my support by donating to No Agenda. Imagine all the people who could do that. Oh, yeah, that'd be fab.
Yeah, on No Agenda. In
got nothing to do with my dog.
Yeah. Huh?
So we have a few people to thank for show 1444444.
A lot of fours.
A row of fours.
Four.
Starting with Morgan Medlock in Forcrest, Washington. He's got a birthday call coming. Angela Pickering in Sour Lake, Texas. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Is that, what is it? Sour Lake? What a place.
I don't know. I have no idea where it is. I've never been, as far as I know.
No, Sour. David Britton in Charleston, South Carolina, 115. Marianne McNamee in Boulder Creek, California, 105. Donald Gates, 100. Gabriel Guzman in Fort Wayne, Indiana, 100. Dame Salty in Manchester, New Hampshire, 100. Amy Beldman, APO, she's in the military or who knows, 100. Jeremiah Shepherd, 100. Titusville, Pennsylvania. Hold on.
Jeremiah's new donor needs a de-douching.
You've been de-douched.
Getting a lot of $100, flat $100 donations. Mm-hmm. We should make something special out of those. Because after that, what happens? We get Sir Kevin McLaughlin, the Duke of Luna, and the lover of America, and the lover of boobs. Giving a boob donation of 8008 in Concord, North Carolina, and he's the only one. Sir Jude in New Hill, North Carolina. Another North Carolinian, 7733. Fabrice Tchoumi in Anaheim, California. A Easter donation, also a birthday, 75. Sir Lucas of the Lost Bits, Federal Way, Washington. Sir Pete in Amsterdam, you know where that
is. I'm looking at Fabrice's note. Easter donation, also my birthday, you're on the list. I've been a bit man overboard for a while, but need to listen again. This is the second person who has recognized that they need to come back and listen again. This is encouraging.
Sir Michael Anthony in Jamaica, New York, 6789. Kevin McAdee in Centennial, Colorado. What was Michael Anthony? He's got some. Who's he got the long?
He put together a video, kind of like a deep fake that is obvious mocking Fauci. I'll put the link in there. Yeah, it's pretty funny.
The Gummy Nerds in Green Bay, Wisconsin, 5678. Kevin McAtee, I said that, in Centennial, Colorado, 60. Carl Zdowski in Niles, Illinois, just outside of Chicago, 5544. Dean Roker, 5510. Sir Luke Rayner, the Earl of London in the Southeast in London, 5510. I don't know what he's got in there. Sir Patrick Coble. Ah, he's the Duke. The Duke of the South.
American.
One of them.
Duke of the South. Happy birthday to Dame Sarah. You are the best wifey. I love you. I have a couple of quick NA meetups coming up soon. Next week on the 28th in Seattle at the Paddy Coins Irish Pub out in Bellevue on May 10th. In Charlotte, May 17th in Denver. Patrick Coble's job now is to go around and make sure the meetups are being held properly. That they're adhering to all regulations of the meetup. The heads need to be the right size on the proper length stick. Sir Patrick Coble to the rescue.
Somebody's got to do it. Nathan Garza is next on the list, 5510 in Whitestown, Indiana. David Pete in Decatur, Texas, 55. Anonymous in Louisville, Kentucky, 5420. Sir Michael Anthony in Rosedale, New York. I got a bunch of these guys in here. By the way, I like the way they incorporated the 420 with 5420. That's cute. Since nobody picked up on the promotion.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Stop. Sir Michael Anthony is in here twice.
Yeah, I know. The guy's on
That's
a roll.
Interesting. And he's happy 420. Okay, thank you, Sir Michael Anthony.
Yeah. Christopher Reese in Wichita, Kansas, $50.49.
And he has a birthday shout-out for his gorgeous wife, Margie, and you're on the list.
And there's a de-douching involved. What did you get mom for a birthday, Dad? A de-douching.
You've been de-douched.
Sir Andrew Benz in Imperial, Missouri, 5005. Noel Ellers in La Jolla, California, 50. Michael Janzak in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. Kevin O'Brien, these are all $50 donors, name and location. Kevin O'Brien, Chicago. Robert Case in Mill Springs, North Carolina. Scott Lavender, our buddy in Montgomery, Texas. Sir Scott. Daniel LeBoy, Sir Daniel in Bath, Michigan. Joel Skiba. Skiba, I think, in Shreveport, Louisiana, which is actually where I got cut off. Julian Robbins in Aptos, California. Lucas Deaton in Dayton. Whee! Andrew Gusick, Sir Andrew in Greensboro, North Carolina. Dame Knight in Edmonds, Washington. Wraps it up, and that's our group of well-wishers and producers for show 444. 1444.
Thank you to these producers, also to the producers who came in under the $50 mark, which we always do for anonymity. Also, people can be on many of these sustaining donations that we have, which are smaller amounts, but they're recurring, and that always helps as a good base when things get a little bit slower. Thank you. Also, thank you to the executive producers and associate executive producers who have titles that you can use. Shut up, I'm finishing up. Who have titles that you can use anywhere titles are recognized. John, did you have something to say?
Yes, Joe Skiba or Sheba in Shreveport needed a de-douching, and I missed it.
No problem.
You've been de-douched.
Now, I have a request of you and of the producers. Tomorrow, we fly early to New York. We hope to fly to New York. That'll be interesting. We hope to make it to New York. This is this is very important because Saturday... my father is being interned in Armonk, New York. He's been living in my sister's closet in a box for about 3 years. He passed away in 2019. This has turned into a mini Curry family reunion. My sisters are coming in, Tiffany from Holland, Willow from Italy, with their spouses and children. Christina is flying in. So we're actually going to be in a huge Airbnb, all like 15 of us or something. There's all kinds of things. Now, I have not been part of the organizing committee of this weekend event. I am usually on the, paying committee. Who's going to help pay for this? So that's where I'm at. But because of this, there is a lunch that this is actually the big get together on Sunday, which starts at 11 and I think ends at 1 or something. So we used to do this from time to time. I do not want to forego a show because we just had two best of. So I'm doing the show. I'm taking the studio. I'm taking the gear. I'm gonna get up at the crack of dawn to produce, but I would request that we start Sunday's show a couple hours later, if that's okay.
Well, it's okay with me.
Well, that's the most important thing I needed to hear.
Well, yeah,
honestly,
I guess it wasn't okay. I was
just as a courtesy, I was offering the producers a say in this, but. I have to be at this. I have to be
so
at this
we
lunch.
Start, we start the show instead of my time 9. It would be 11.
Yeah, that's the
and
idea.
And I would go until 6, 7, 8, 9 o'clock at night.
Probably the night. It'll probably go into Monday in the way it works.
So, yeah, I can do it. I think it's fine. I don't have anything planned for Sunday that I can think of that would
good.
Be
good. I appreciate that. Everybody appreciates
it. Step on this.
And so, yes, Darren will
the
do a...
The dog might not like it, by the way.
No, the dog will have plenty of... The dog's be like, hey, man, it's time for me to interrupt you. Why aren't you working? What's going on? Darren O'Neill has already committed to doing a four-hour rock and roll pre-show. He hasn't really committed to it.
Time I can contribute my 1 hour of content for his show.
Oh, there you go. You should get in touch with Darren. It'll be great. And so there will be some kind of live extravaganza as we delay the start of episode 1445. And again, thank you, producers. This is how we work together. This is how production works. I got a big a jobs karma, actually, for anybody
jobs,
who needs it.
Jobs, 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 and jobs. Let's vote for jobs.
Yeah! You got karma.
And a reminder that you can contribute to the show. Information and instructions can be found here.
Dvorak.org/NA.
It's a Saturday and Friday. On no agenda. nice list today. We have Lisa Lynch, who says happy birthday to three people. Her father would have been 88 on April 19th. Her husband turned 62 on the 19th, and she herself turned 60 on the 19th. Does it get any crazier? Congratulations to you. Jesse Lyon, happy birthday to her twin brother, Chris, and Brennan. Maybe it's twin brothers. April 21st, that is their birthday today. Drew Watkins, 29 today. Brian Torres, happy birthday to his son, Nico, who turns 15 and has the producer credit today. Chris Reese, his gorgeous wife, Margie, April 22nd, so that's tomorrow. Morgan Medlock will be 48 on the 23rd. Katie, happy birthday to her son, Ezekiel. His birthday is on the 28th. Viscount Dirty Dick Bangs, his son, Colton Reed Bangs, turning 3, loves the goat scream. Fabrice Toomey celebrates, and Sir Patrick Coble says happy birthday to his wife, Dame Sarah. Happy birthday from everybody here at the best podcast in the universe. It's your
birthday, yeah. Come gather round, douchebag, producer and slave. As we all thank your brothers and sisters who gave us some of them nights, some of them days.
We have a title change currently from Sir Jacob, Guardian of the Limburg Coast. He no longer, I believe, is in the armed forces, nor does he live in the Limburg on the Limburg Coast. So he requested a title change, which we happily do for him. He is now Circumcised Guardian, Circumcised Guardian of the Fat Point. Whoa, whoa. Put that on your business card. He sent us videos of his... I don't know if it's his house or if it's apartment or if maybe it's just his man cave. That dude has a lot of no agenda paraphernalia all over the place. And it's good. Oh, it's good. It's nice stuff. It's really nice stuff. Congratulations on that title change. We have two nights to handle today. So here's my half of the two blades we need.
Well, here's one for me.
That's your shiny one. Up on the podium, please, Jeremy Slate and Brian Skelton, both of you, have reached that pinnacle. That's right, you're up here on the podium, and you now become Knights of the No Agenda Roundtable. I am very proud to bring you here and pronounce the KD as Sir Jeremy Slate and Sir Brian with an I. Gentlemen, for you, we've got Hookers and Blow, Red Boys and Chardonnay, Eagle Rare Bourbon on the Rocks, and Circle K McRibs. We got Cookies and Vodka, Warm Beer and Cold Women, Taquitos and Tequila, Polish Potato Vodka, Diet Soda and Video Games, Fish Pie and Fellatio. We've got Harlots and Haldol, Beer and Blunts, Brazilian Hotties and Chakasha. We got Ruben S. Women and Rosé, Bong Hits and Bourbon, Sparkling Cider and Escorts, Ginger Ale and Gerbils. But of course, it's the mutton, it's the mead, it's here. Enjoy. And before you head off to South Carolina for your meetup, Brian, go to noagendanation.com/ring so that we can get that ring out to you as fast as possible. It's your night ring. It is a signet ring, so you can use the wax that is accompanies the in your package to seal your correspondence. And, of course, there's always a certificate of authenticity. Anyone can be a knight or a dame. Some of you have taken 10 years, and you still get there, and we appreciate all of the help, value for value. Time, talent, treasure, the No Agenda Show.
No Agenda Meetups.
Lots of meetups taking place. Not a lot of reports today, but that's okay. We have the Resist We Much meetup, which was, I believe, in Fresno. And here's their quick report.
This is Sir Robertson of Two Sticks here at the Barrel House Brew Pub in Fresno for the Resist We Much No Agenda meetup.
Number one of the douchebags, Chris, in the morning.
Laura, and my favorite is Jobs, Jobs, Jobs from President Trump. And it's Dorothy. And let's see, I like everything.
Resist We Much.
Woo! All right. Thank you very much. Meetups on the calendar for today, show day. We've got Youngsville meetup number 2 at 6 o'clock at Bud's Tavern, Youngsville, North Carolina, or Charlotte's Thursday at 7 o'clock at Ed's Tavern in Charlotte, North Carolina. What is this? Competing? Well, it's Youngsville and Charlotte. Interesting. How far are those two from each other? Maybe you guys should consolidate, if appropriate.
I think they're far
away.
Yeah.
Tomorrow is Flight of the No Agenda number 27, 533 at Steelcraft Long Beach. That's in California. Leo Bravo taking flight with you. On Saturday, the Tiny Amygdala of Anchorage unite at 4:30 Alaskan time, Bear Paw Bar and Grill. The local 512 Circus on the Road is in Albuquerque, New Mexico. That's our very own Baron Scott. He'll be at Rio Bravo Brewing Company in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And Baron Scott will be organizing it. Also on Saturday, Sane and Free in Sioux Falls, 2 o'clock Central, Granite City. And the 3 Mile Island Evac Zone, 3:33 p.m. Crossed Water in Lewisberry, Pennsylvania. And finally on show day, the next one on Sunday, the Northeast Texas Piney Woods Meetup. Edition 2, Part 2, 4:33 at Rotolo's Pizzeria in Longview, Texas. A long list all the way through. Now we have meetups into June and July. There's got to be something on there that is close enough to you. And if there isn't, it's very simple. Go to noagendameetups.com. See if you can find anything. If it's not, you can start one yourself. And it's always just like a party.
Sometimes you want to go hang out with all the nights and days. You want to be where you want me, triggered or held to blame. You want to be where everybody feels the same. It's like a party.
Like a party. Got a couple things to do before we leave, but let's get our ISOs out of the way. Did you bring any ISOs?
I only have the one, and it's probably not. It's okay, but you probably have better.
Okay, I see it here. Here we go.
Deprives you of your dignity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I have better ones. Let me see. I have, where's my ISOs? I have this one.
This is a scam.
No, I don't like that one. That's Bannon. This one.
Smoke, standby, 3 cruise missile caliber.
No. This one is interesting.
If you have nothing better to do, definitely listen to that show.
Okay. The feud continues. This one might be the one. Yeah, what?
What was that last one you made?
This one? This one.
If you have nothing better to do, definitely listen to that show.
Now, here's my last one. Hold on.
I can't understand a word he said.
It's a ha, let's go, baby.
Oh, no, that's too bad. I kind of like that one. But I would say this, we did the last DH employee. Horowitz says, thank you for ever so much for you know, he's accusing me of creating this fake feud between the two of you.
Fake feud?
And I said,
I said,
this is nuts. I'm just trying to straighten things out between you two. Why would I want to see anything like this between my two best friends?
Well, first of all, I need to sit down and hold on to something. You just said I'm one of your two best friends. This is news. I thought I was your only friend. Hello? And he hung up on me. He just left.
I hate to see you.
What happened? I said, I thought I was your only friend, and then you hung up on me.
No, I didn't. It was the clean feet hung up on you.
Oh, okay.
I said, I forgot what I said.
Whatever it was. It doesn't matter.
I'm trying to stop this from continuing because I don't like to see people upset like this.
Well, it's going to take a little bit more work. I mean, you started this, so you're going to have to finish. It's totally. Yes, you did.
No, he's the one who brought it up.
No, I'm not so sure. Remember, it's DH unplugged, not HD unplugged. So you're clearly leading the pack. It's okay, John.
Well, the reason you do DH is just it's just for formal reasons. HD makes it sound like high definition when you talk about audio or something. Yeah. So that's really an issue.
I would like to finish with just a few clips about the Disney situation in Florida.
I have an introductory clip of Santos. DeSantos actually talking about it.
DeSantis, not DeSantos.
Okay. You think I'll ever get it right?
No, probably not.
I haven't spelled it right on here.
DeSantis on district?
Yeah, this is him talking.
Which he does a lot.
I think, as many of you know, the Florida legislature is meeting this week to consider the congressional reapportionment plan for Florida for the next 10 years. and that is what they've been called upon to do. But I am announcing today that we are expanding the call of what they are going to be considering this week. And so, yes, they will be considering the congressional map, but they also will be considering termination of all special districts that were enacted in Florida prior to 1968, and that includes the Reedy Creek Improvement District. I want to thank Speaker Sprouls and Senator Simpson for not only working, obviously, for the reapportionment, but for stepping up and making sure that we make the sunset or the termination on those special districts happen, which I think is very important.
So we touched on this on the last episode, and I have a nice clip here from Florida State Representative Spencer. What's this guy's name? He's Spencer Roach, and he explains this, as you just heard the governor of Florida talking about. Since 1968, there were some special rules for Disney, and this is a good explanation.
Well, Disney has and has had for almost 60 years a very special relationship with Florida. They have what I refer to as Florida's 68th county. It's about 43 square miles. It's called the Reedy Creek Improvement District, and they essentially are their own government. They're exempt from all county regulation and most state regulations. Legally, under the law, Disney could build a nuclear power plant there, and we couldn't do a darn thing about it. And look, my objection to this, you know, I know it seems retaliatory, but I would describe it more as opportunistic. Disney's weakened politically. We should go after this. But my principal objection to this as a conservative free marketeer, it's anti-free market. I mean, you have all these other theme parks in Florida. You have Universal Studios, SeaWorld, Legoland, Busch Gardens. And here in the district that I represent, you have a theme park. It's the largest single-site employer in my district. It's called the Shell Factory. They'd love to have their own government there, but they don't have that. Why should Disney get this special privilege and no one else should have that? I think it's just an aberration of the free market. And let me tell you what else Disney's doing. So they're expanding out of their traditional role of sort of theme park amusement. They're now building a $400 million movie studio there. They're building a fourth Disney hotel. They're building a $300 million office space, and they don't have to apply with any of the regulatory burdens that any other realtor, business developer, or builder would have to comply to. They have an enormous advantage over the rest of the market. It's unfair. It's anti-free market. It's anti-economic liberty. It's wrong.
Why now? Why not decades ago?
Well, here's the thing. This to me, if I was a Disney shareholder, I would immediately ask for the resignation of the CEO.
Because he kicked this crap off, didn't he? He was really,
yes, he kicked it off. Problem. This has been going on smoothly. Disney was essentially in the Orlando area, a city state that could do whatever it wanted, and it could do all kinds of cool things, and it was a good deal for the company.
It's almost like an Indian Native American reservation.
Pretty much. And because they decided to start meddling in Florida politics with their woke ideas, they did was draw attention to themselves, and somebody in the Republican side said, look, wait a minute, why don't we reconsider what this whole situation with Disney is? And then they took a look, because you can download the Reedy Creek development documents, and it is really interesting. It's something I was going to send to you because I know you'd like to read it.
Mm-hmm.
But you forgot? No, I was last night, and so you don't need that aggravation. So, but the point is that they drew attention to us by meddling when they shouldn't have been meddling. They should just shut up. But no. It's all stakeholders now. You have stakeholder. We have to meddle because it's our job to meddle because it was something we don't like, or we're meddling. So we want kids, kindergartners, to be taught about gender. Okay. If I was a shareholder, I would demand the head of the CEO of Disney. He is behind the whole thing. Get rid of him.
Yeah, this went pretty far. So besides the so-called don't say gay bill, actually, I have this is an NBC News report. Listen to, so there are a few people in the Florida State legislature who went against this, of course, because they are all in on, I don't know, Disney having that kind of power. But when, and I think these are Democrats, when they lose control, they always go back to the same stuff.
Tonight, Florida's new fight against the house that Nikki built.
Thank
Florida Senate approving legislation to eliminate Disney's self-governing authority and tax breaks.
23 yeas, 16 nays.
Democrats unanimously opposed it.
Why are we putting our knee on the neck of the mouse?
So they're taking a Black Lives Matter knee on the neck and applying it to a cartoon character. Why are we putting our knee on the neck of Mickey Mouse? This is a sick individual who thinks this way.
It's ridiculous. It's nothing short of extortion. It's nothing short of
extortion.
Bullying.
It's bullying!
It's the latest chapter in a confrontation between Disney and Florida Republicans led by Governor Ron DeSantis, who pushed for the legislation after Disney called for the repeal of Florida's parental rights and education law, what critics dubbed the Don't Say Gay law that bans classroom discussion on sexual orientation and gender identity for children in kindergarten through third grade.
This state is governed by the interests of the people of the state of Florida. It is not based on the demands of California corporate executives.
There it is. He's pointing out that it should be the CEO who gets rousted. What now? Yeah. You remember that, like 2 hours ago we were talking and I said,
by the way, that woman that was bitching and moaning,
mm-hmm.
These are the same Democrats that bitch and moan about special tax credits, which is really oil depletion allowances,
right,
for the oil companies.
Right.
But this huge tax break for Disney's okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, go on. Sorry.
I think I mentioned a couple hours ago that I believe that many of these people in politics and in the body politic, that they really believe in what they're doing, and it's righteous, as the whether it's COVID, whether it's Ukraine, or whether it's this. And Jen Psaki, spokeshole for the Biden administration, I think this was a podcast, and so it's a parental rights bill with the parents, the voters, who would presume is parents, said, you know what, we just don't want this stuff discussed from kindergarten up to third grade. And that's it. And that was immediately dubbed the Don't Say Gay bill, and it blew up, and we've got, and we're abusing children all over the place to promote this. And I think Jen Psaki really believes in it. This clip of her being super upset and getting everything wrong, because I've read the parental rights bill. There's really nothing in there that is crazy out of the ordinary, but she takes it this way.
This is a political wedge issue and an attempt to win a culture war. And they're doing that in a way that is harsh and cruel to a community of kids, especially. I'm gonna get emotional about this issue because it's horrible. But you know, it's like kids who are bullied, and this is like all these leaders are taking steps to hurt them and hurt their lives and hurt their families. And you look at some of these laws in these states, and it is going after parents who are in loving relationships who have kids. It's completely outrageous. Sorry, this is an issue that makes me completely crazy. But it is an issue that is a political wedge issue. It is not a reflection of where the country is.
She's not acting, man. She believes this.
That's unbelievable.
She's really upset, and she's goes after parents in loving relationships. Is she referring to teachers? Who I don't understand what she's doing. But it was sad.
Yeah, I don't do this lightly. That's clip of the day.
At the very end, ladies and gentlemen, he comes in with the winner.
Clip of the day.
There you go.
Something seriously wrong with her.
I think she she has issues. I think she's on the edge. She wants to get out. She's cracking. She wants to be. She can't even do the MSNBC gig. I think that got screwed up. She knows she can't do that now. She'll be so excoriated.
Oh, you're right, man. Because the MSNBC people turned on her.
Of course.
This had to hurt her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's hurt. She's hurt. And she said, it makes me crazy. And there you go. All right. End of show mixes, Amducius and Jacko Fire. Two very depressing ones, so enjoy that. Cold Ass and Abel Kirby up next on noagendastream.com with a rare encounter. This is episode 94. I I don't think it's live. Maybe it is. I don't know. But if you're at the Troll Room, trollroom.io, hang around. Listen for these cats. Yeah, that's all I got, really. I'm looking forward to a Sunday. Hopefully, we'll be in New York doing the show 2 hours later. Tell everybody that what we're up to. And I will have travel reports and reports from the cemetery. I'm coming to you from the heart of the Texas Hill Country, FEMA Region Number 6. In the morning, everybody. I'm Adam Curry.
And from Northern Silicon Valley, where I remain. No New York for me. I'm John C. Dvorak.
And you're lucky. We return on Sunday. We'll see how well we do. Please remember us at dvorak.org/NA. Until then, enjoy your week, the rest of it. And adios, mofos! And such.
I promise you, the president has a big stick. I promise you.
Gotta get us all in.
Wow.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
I'm gonna leave that Bible here.
Thank you.
No, I ask you all one favor.
I need a lecture or a speech. Here's the thing. I have complete respect for the Me Too movement. I have four daughters.
Mom, I want to know what you're drinking. God, let me look at your sister.
The president has a big stick. I promise you.
He was talking to me while he was rubbing my nose with his.
My dad used to say, you got one job. I have a beautiful sister like you got. I swear to God, he used to say, you have one job. Keep the guys away from your sister.
I was up against the wall, and I remember his hands underneath my blouse and underneath my skirt, and his fingers penetrating me as he was trying to kiss me, and I was pulling away.
Reed tells us that at the time she complained to the Senate Personnel Office that Biden had, quote, made her feel uncomfortable.
The president has a big stick. I promise you.
Do I consider it inappropriate to smell someone's hair? To get so close that I smell their hair? Yes.
I promise you, the president has a big stick. I promise you.
Coons insisted his daughter was not disturbed by this televised nuzzle from former Vice President Joe Biden in 2015.
The president has a big stick. I promise you.
Hey, Bridget, how old are you?
16.
Oh, hope you got big dogs around the house.
Big dogs.
The president has a big stick. I promise you.
Why don't you kiss me? Look over there, Mary Lyon. We're already in the country. We are 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 already in the country
We are on the brink of a dramatic change where we are about to, and I'll say this boldly, we're about to abandon the traditional system of money and accounting. We're already in World War III.
The best podcast in the universe.
Dvorak.org/NA
If you have nothing better to do, definitely listen to that show.